from his studios in New York. It's time for Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora, where sports meets life. Here's your host, Dan Tortora.
Welcome here to Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora on WakeUpCallDT.com, your one-stop sports shop, and on MixLR.com/WakeUpCallDT. If you haven't become a member of both, please make sure you do so now. On WakeUpCallDT.com, you can become a member for free, or you can subscribe for free. Either way, it'll give you an opportunity to connect with my email list and know when things are going on with Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora and Dan Tortora Broadcast Media. If I'm going to be in the community, we have different events coming up and whatnot, you'll definitely want to be a part of that. And on MixLR.com/WakeUpCallDT, if you become a member of that, you'll never miss a live show again. You will be emailed every single time the show goes live, and you'll be able to talk with me in the live chat room during the show, which only members can do. So make sure you become a free member of WakeUpCallDT.com and MixLR.com/WakeUpCallDT today. Here on the show, I'm live once again from Washington, D.C., here for the ACC tournament and coverage of Championship Week and things going on all throughout the country when it comes to the NCAA tournament, and even outside of that. So I'm very happy to say that Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora, for the first time ever, has been live on site from our nation's capital, Washington, D.C. Started on Tuesday, March 8th, and will carry all the way through to Sunday, March 13th. In my live show span here in Washington, D.C. So thank you for those that have been tuning in and those listening to the playback as well. I want to thank everyone that has been a guest on the show while I've been down here, former NCAA official and now supervisor of officials for the MAC as well, and the MAAC, because there's two MACs. There's the MAC and the MAAC. So the Metro Atlantic Athletic Conference supervisor of officials and a supervisor of officials for 43 schools in NCAA Division III basketball. Mike Kitts has been a part of the show. Syracuse alum John Wallace has been on the show, as well as Josh Pace, Demetrius Nichols, Dale Shackelford, Louis Orr. I want to thank everybody that has been a part of the show. And before that, Lazarus Sims, Leo Routens. The list goes on and on and on of people that have been a part of this, as well as Brandon Trish. So Syracuse Orange men's basketball alumni, I want to thank them all for coming on to the show here on Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora and giving you an opportunity to hear them in an interview that you won't find anywhere else but on Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora. So thank you for that, and make sure you go back and listen to the playbacks on WakeUpCallDT.com and in the Wake Up Call DT Lounge tab as well. So, like I said, we are here wrapping up, coming toward the end of the week of this live broadcasting week from Washington, D.C. I want to thank the Market Diner with the morning menu, proudly presented every single morning that the show is on. The morning menu is the show topics for the day. So I want to put a special thanks out to the Market Diner, 2100 Park Street in Syracuse, New York, in the regional market across from Destiny USA. And I really cannot thank them enough for everything that they do. They are the proud home of the Dan Tortora special. So if you haven't gotten over there and tried it, you might be in the minority at this point. Many people have. I want to thank everybody that's gone out and tried it. And I got to meet a bunch of people that have tried it already. It is a Belgian waffle cut in half, filled with a bacon, egg, and cheese omelet. It is my breakfast sandwich, so to speak, that's available all day long. You can get it whenever you want, Monday through Sunday, breakfast, lunch, dinner, Monday through Saturday, and then Sunday they close a little bit earlier, but you can get it all day as well. So as for the Dan Tortora special, some people eat it like a sandwich, others cut it up, put some syrup on it. Either way, it's a Belgian waffle with a bacon, egg, and cheese omelet that truly is a different experience than anything I've ever had, and I want to thank the Market Diner for letting me create that with them. So once again, the Market Diner, go out and see them and support Central New York locally by going to 2100 Park Street in Syracuse, New York, in the regional market across from Destiny USA. And like I said, the Market Diner proudly presenting the morning menu, and today's morning menu is going to be the Bubble Watch. We're going to take a look at that, how things are shaking out here. I have 12 teams to talk about on this bubble. And if you're following me on Twitter, I got to do something fun with the creation of this bubble. I put a bunch of teams in different bubbles that I found and made a logo of sorts, so to speak. So today we will be talking about the Pittsburgh Panthers as well as the Cincinnati Bearcats. We will be talking about the Monmouth Hawks as well as the St. Mary's Gals, the St. Bonaventure Bonnies, the Vanderbilt Commodores, the UConn Huskies, the Oregon State Beavers, Michigan Wolverines, the USC Trojans, the Tulsa Golden Hurricane, and the Syracuse Orange. Every one of those teams a part of the bubble conversation in the morning menu, proudly presented by the Marquette Diner. And also coming up, we're going to take a look at the NFL. We haven't talked about the NFL here. Some of the transactions have shaken out over the last couple of days. This last week has been pretty busy. There's been some big names that are shifting and moving to other places. And as I said before, all 32 NFL teams, for the most part, had money. The Bills were in the negative going into free agency, but the Jacksonville Jaguars, with over $70 million to spend, they were the number one team when it came to salary cap space. So, and they've been spending it. So we'll take a look at the NFL and some of these things that have been happening, different moves that have been made, and of course the Johnny Manziel factor and the fact that the Cleveland Browns had an opportunity to pass him in the draft, and they did once, and then they went back and got him, and now they had an opportunity to pass on him again, and they took it this time. So the Johnny Manziel factor, we'll talk about that. We'll also discuss, like I said, some of those big names that are switching homes. And the Jacksonville Jaguars have been extremely busy, and I expected them to be, with over $70 million. I've covered the team for now. This is going into 8 seasons, and knowing how much money they had to spend, they've definitely been out there spending it. So we'll take a look at who they've been going out to get, as well as somebody that they stayed loyal to, and so much more. Bubble Watch, as well as NFL Talk, is coming up right here, right now, on Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora on WakeUpCallDT.com and MixLR.com/WakeUpCallDT after you hear from these great partners of Dan Tortora Broadcast Media. Buy local, support local, because you're local. And if you want local businesses to stay in Central New York, the only way to do it is to support them. So make sure you do so, including these businesses coming up right now.
Here is Stacy Tanner, owner of Ole Ole, talking about the freshest Mexican food you will find.
Every year as a family, we go to Mexico on vacation, and we love the cuisine. We love the freshness of the food. We can promise you freshly made food. Nothing comes in a package here. We got a bag of rice and a bag of beans, and the rest is all fresh vegetables and meats. We really wanted to represent Mexican cuisine and fresh food, where family and our young people or older people can go have a healthy, good meal. Well, we are located in the Mattydale Shopping Plaza. My side faces Woody's Jerkwater, so we are literally neighbors, my husband and I. So kind of a side entrance. And that's on Brewerton Road in Mattydale. Our phone number is 455-5653 or 455-5-OLE.
Larger Than Life Toys and Comics is a 6,000 square foot haven of comics and collectibles located inside the Great Northern Mall in Clay, New York. They offer new as well as vintage comics, collectibles, video games, and more. Larger Than Life Toys and Comics will also buy from you. So bring in your used or vintage comics and toys today to their store inside the Great Northern Mall in Clay, New York. Call 315-622-1891 to learn more about their trade-in policy, store credit, and even layaway. That's 315-622-1891. And make sure to like their Facebook page, Larger Than Life Comics, for constant updates, store hours, and more.
Comic book, toys, gaming, and entertainment fans, this is your wake-up call. Salt City Collecticon is going on Sunday, May 15th from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the F-Shed at the Regional Market on 2100 Park Street in Syracuse, across from Destiny USA. Buy your pre-sale tickets for $8 by going to Larger Than Life Toys and Comics inside the Great Northern Mall, right off of Route 31 in Clay, or by going to saltcitycollecticon.com. All day long, gaming, opportunity to buy comic books, entertainment, special guests, trivia, and prizes throughout the day, as well as food from Cam's Pizzeria, Carvel DeWitt, Wit, Q Dogs, and Ole Ole Mexican Restaurant, you can't afford to miss Salt City Collecticon, Sunday, May 15th from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m., proudly brought to you by Larger Than Life Toys and Comics, Syracuse Nerd, Rainy Toad Gaming, and Larger Than Life with Dan Tortora. Buy your tickets now at Larger Than Life Toys and Comics inside the Great Northern Mall or on saltcitycollecticon.com.
This is Dr. Tim Whiting of Sterp Chiropractic and Wellness Center. Here at Sterp Chiropractic, we strive to provide our patients with the highest quality of care in a comforting and welcoming atmosphere. We are not simply pain doctors. We spend time looking at the whole body and address each patient's needs and goals. This usually includes chiropractic adjustments, muscle work, and tips on nutrition and supplementation that fits each patient's needs. We want to develop a plan that promotes overall health and wellness and focuses on future injury prevention. Our office is located at 1628 West Genesee Street in Syracuse. Please give us a call at 315-472-7128 with any of your chiropractic or wellness needs.
Serving the Central New York community for over six decades, the Penn and Trophy Center, located on 111 East Willow Street in Syracuse, New York, is your home for custom engraving of plaques, awards, trophies, clocks, watches, as well as personalized gifts, sports awards, and so much more. When it comes to finding the right gift for anyone in your family, on your team, or in your business, the Penn and Trophy Center is the place to go. 111 East Willow Street in Syracuse, New York. Call now to set up an appointment, 315-422-8797. That's 315-422-8797. Or stop in at 111 East Willow Street in Syracuse, New York. And to see more from Penn and Trophy Center, go to pennandtrophy.com. That's pennandtrophy.com.
Here is Tommy from Woody's Jerkwater Pub and Grub.
Woody's is going into its 13th year, and you know, we started out as a what we thought was going to be a neighborhood corner bar, which has turned into, you know, a really good sports bar. We're adding 360-inch TVs. Just really a great place to have a beer and have some food. So that same Irish pub feel where you can go in there and relax and not worry about, you know, what's going on. I take pride in our food. We have burgers, wraps, salads, Cubans. Our wings, obviously, I think are some of the best in the city. We have a great Philly cheesesteak. We have a great Cuban. All my soccer players love the Buffalo Chicken Wrap.
Woody's Jerkwater Pub and Grub is located in the Mattydale Shopping Center off of Brewerton Road in Syracuse, New York.
Welcome back here to Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora on WakeUpCallDT.com, your one-stop sports shop, and on MixLR.com/WakeUpCallDT. Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora continues live here from Washington, D.C., our nation's capital. Have started here down in Tuesday, March 8th, and will continue through Sunday, March 13th. In a live broadcast brought to you daily at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. For those that are used to the show, it airs Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Speaking of Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, airing at 9 a.m. to noon Eastern Time. But this week, in being live from Washington, D.C., instead of just going Monday, Wednesday, Friday, I did a show on Monday up in Central New York, and from Tuesday all the way through Sunday, March 8th to March 13th, the show has been, is, and will be live from Washington, D.C., daily at 9 a.m. Eastern Time, and my coverage of the ACC tournament, as well as the Bubble Watch, and other things around the sports world, and obviously speaking with all my guests that have joined me this week one-on-one, so I thank them for being a part of the show live. Plenty of Syracuse Orange men's basketball alumni, like I had mentioned, as well as Mike Kitts, former NCAA official that officiated during Final Fours, officiated in the Big 12, SEC, Big 10, Big East, ACC, so on and so forth, as well as in the MAC, and he is now the current supervisor of officials in the MAAC, as well as supervisor of officials for 43 NCAA Division I men's basketball schools. So I want to thank Mike for being a part of the show this week as well. As promised, my bubble watch, there's 12 teams that I'm looking at right now on the bubble. We're going to go in alphabetical order down the line and see if I believe, based on the teams that they have gone up against and what their records shows, if I would put them into the NCAA tournament. So this is my analysis, my bubble watch, of the NCAA Division I men's basketball tournament. What teams should get in, what teams maybe are on that line that could go either way, what teams I don't see getting in at all. Now, obviously, you have bracketology going on around the country, different people taking a look at this, and this is my view of those teams that are being talked about. So here with Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora, this is my bubble watch, and let's get started. Cincinnati in the AAC, known to some as the American, 12-6 in their conference in the regular season, 22 wins and 10 losses overall. They're 1-3 versus teams ranked in the top 25 at the time of play, including a 1-1 split with SMU. So that one win against the top 25 in their four games against the nation's top 25 is against SMU, but they also lost to SMU, so they split there. So that takes away from the win a little bit. They're 2-1 against UConn, but they lost in four overtimes in the AAC tournament in a thrilling game that I'm actually here in studio watching the playback of this game, because it was truly an amazing game. I mean, to see the shot, the 62-footer that was made, we'll talk about that coming up here on Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora. I there's not enough to say. I mean, you look at UConn, they didn't win against Syracuse at six overtimes. They won against Cincinnati in four, but you're looking at two games, 10 overtimes, and two of the best games played in NCAA tournament history when you look at what's on the line and you look at the fact that, you know, obviously there are a lot of heroics that go on. I don't think you can ever understate a 62-foot jumper that is truly almost the entire length of the court. So credit to UConn. We'll talk about that in a moment. But Cincinnati's 2-1 against UConn. They lost in the four overtime game most recently in the AAC tournament and losing in their first game they played in this year's AAC tournament. So no advancement, no wins in the tournament. I think that that's something, at least that's important to me when I look at the bubble, is are you winning in your tournament? Did you get past your first round? Even if you start in the second round or the quarterfinals, depending on, you know, first and second round buys and whatnot, I still believe you have to win a game, because if you have a bye, that's great. You've gotten yourself to that point. If you're one of the teams that gets a bye, that gets through, typically, you know, you're a team that is either going to make the tournament, in my opinion, or you're close. But to win a game is always safe, and Cincinnati did not do that. Now, it was a valiant effort, and they fought hard, and they went to four overtimes. It's not like they lost by 20 in regulation, so I give them credit for that. But Cincinnati, when you look at the teams that are still in the AAC tournament, this is what hurts Cincinnati. Number 10, Tulane, is there. Number 6, Memphis, and number 5, UConn, that passed Cincinnati. These are all teams that are below Cincinnati that were seeded lower than Cincinnati. Cincinnati being a 4, UConn being a 5, Memphis a 6, and Tulane a 10. Number 1, Temple, is the only team that advanced that was supposed to advance. Number 2, Houston's out of it. Number 3, Tulsa, is out of it as well. So when push comes to shove, Cincinnati, if they were still in the mix for this, it's a great thing for them, especially going up against Temple would give them another opportunity to take down the Temple Owls. And that is something, when you look at the scheduling, did not happen this season for Cincinnati. They're 0-2 against Temple, and Temple has been the darling of the AAC. So when you look at that, you look at teams on the bubble, did they defeat the tops in their conference? Well, in the case of Temple, or in case of Cincinnati, I should say, they did not. They did not defeat Temple. Temple's been at the top for a while. They're 0-2 against Temple. And like I said, Tulane and Memphis moving on in the AAC tournament, as well as UConn, is a detriment to Cincinnati, because now it pushes them down the line because of the fact that they're 1-3 against the nation's top 25. And being 2-1 against UConn is phenomenal. But if UConn continues to move forward in this tournament, that is easily forgotten, because you lost to them most recently. And the teams under you doing better than you are in your conference tournament is also another thing affecting Cincinnati. They don't have any huge wins of merit. Like I said, the only win that they have against the top 25 is SMU, but splitting with SMU evens it out there. If they're 2-0 against SMU, then maybe you look at it a little bit more. But at the same time, SMU is a team that you don't see here in the tournament. You don't see moving forward because of all their issues and everything that's gone on. So that win is all nice and dandy, but the teams that are playing in the AAC tournament, the South Floridas, the East Carolinas, Tulane, Central Florida, Tulsa, Memphis, Houston, and company on and so forth, these are the teams that you have to beat, and these are the teams you have to win against. Unfortunately for Cincinnati, SMU and everything they've been through this season with sanctions and whatnot, those wins are great, but they're not going to hold as much weight, I think, when push comes to shove, because they split with them 1-1, and because they lost to UConn, and UConn is on the bubble as well. So this is one of those situations like Syracuse and Pitt, where if you lose to that team might be jumping in your grave and taking your spot. So right now, Cincinnati, when I look at it, I think there's better teams to put out there that are on bubble watch. So if it's up to me, I would not be putting Cincinnati in the NCAA tournament as of right now. Monmouth in the MAC, 17-3 in their conference, 27-7 overall. They defeated the only team that they faced that was ranked in the top 25 at the time of play, and that's a Notre Dame Fighting Irish. So a team from the Metro Atlantic Athletic Conference, I should say, pardon me, the MAC, those types of teams are easily forgotten. When you look at the MAC and you look at what they've put together, these are teams that people brush over. The Metro Atlantic Athletic Conference, yes, every once in a while there's going to be an opportunity where somebody will get through and get to the NCAA tournament because they've won the MAC. But very rarely are you hearing about teams getting that respect of not having to win the conference tournament, but still getting to move forward. And in the case of Monmouth, you know, this is a team, like I said, 27-7 overall. They have had a good season. They've had a strong season. But this is also a team that, despite having a strong season, didn't take care of business as the number one seed in the MAC tournament. Iona is the one that got that. And before the tournament even started, I said, listen, Monmouth is the one that's supposed to win this, but watch out for Iona. And even watch out for Siena. And Iona was somebody who took care of business. They came in and they won it. And to their credit, they have now secured their bid because they have an automatic bid. When you win your conference tournament, that's what you get in the NCAA Division I men's basketball tournament. And that being helpful to Iona, but it also leaves this interesting scenario with Monmouth. Where do you put them? Well, like I said, they're coming out of the MAC. They played the ACC. They played Notre Dame. They took down Notre Dame. Notre Dame, forget about what happened against North Carolina in the Final Four of the ACC tournament that I'm down here covering in Washington, D.C., and that's where the show Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora is live from today and has been throughout the week. If you look at Notre Dame, and yes, they had a big loss to North Carolina. They had a terrible shooting night, and that's going to happen from time to time. They were 8 for 24 in the first half. They made 8. North Carolina made 16. From there, it just blew open. But Notre Dame, more often than not, when you look at the likes of Steve Asturia, as well as Bonzi Colson, Zach August, the list goes on and on of talent for Notre Dame, ability for Notre Dame, even guys like Matt Ryan coming off the bench, and Mike Bray as their head coach. There are so many positive things with Notre Dame. This is a team that's been ranked in the top 25 throughout the season. This is a team that is a force to be reckoned with in the ACC. They have made it now twice in two seasons. Last season and this season, they have made it to the ACC Tournament Final Four. And last season, they won the whole thing by defeating the likes of Duke and North Carolina. And I know that last season is last season, but a lot of that talent is still on this Notre Dame team, which makes this Monmouth win huge. It makes a Monmouth win a mammoth win when you look at Notre Dame, their veteran status, the way that they play, the fact that they're beating the likes of Duke here in their ACC tournament before losing to North Carolina. So that victory, even though there was only one game played against the top 25, some teams don't play any teams in the top 25. And those are the teams that are very, very difficult to make a case for because you don't know how they'd fight against them. Well, Monmouth defeated Notre Dame. They split 1-1 with USC of the Pac-12 that is on my bubble watch as well. They lost their conference tournament championship to Iona, but they did advance to their conference tournament championship. You know, in the case of Cincinnati, Cincinnati didn't win a game in the AAC. They not only did they not advance to the tournament championship game, they didn't even get to the Final Four. In the case of Monmouth, they got to the final game. They were expected to get to the final game, and they did exactly that. number one team in the regular season, number one seed in the tournament, and the number one seed gets to the conference tournament championship. Despite losing, and a lot of credit to Iona for that, Monmouth, in my opinion, deserves to get in. Because that Notre Dame win, Notre Dame defeated Duke twice, Louisville, and 1-1 with North Carolina. Monmouth beat that team. It was the same players, same head coach. They defeated that team. So I think Notre Dame and what they've been able to do has actually helped Monmouth state their case in getting that victory over Notre Dame, as well as the fact of having 27 wins and 34 tries, 17-3 in your conference. I would put Monmouth in. I think when you see them beat a team like Notre Dame, this is a team that can play spoiler, and who doesn't want to see that? That's why people watch March Madness. Yes, you have a favorite team that you're going to root for, but you watch March Madness for the spoilers. You watch March Madness to see who's going to take down the teams around the country. These exciting games. People get into brackets like the Wake Up Call Bracket Challenge. And when you get into a tournament bracket, when you get into March Madness, when you do something like the Wake Up Call Bracket Challenge that had over 300 people last year, we made the front page of Yahoo for brackets. And right now, we're beating the Yahoo bracket that's connected to Syracuse. You can connect it to a logo, so I connect it to Syracuse. There's a lot of Syracuse fans that follow me in Syracuse and around the country. So you can pick a logo of a team to kind of make it noticeable. We're leading. So thank you to everybody that's joining. Please make sure you do so. Look up the Wake Up Call bracket on Yahoo. And later on in the show, I'll give you the exact URL and all the information for that. But when you look at March Madness, when you look at the conference tournament that goes into this, Monmouth loses, but Monmouth can play spoiler. Monmouth is capable to play anyone. Because of the game against Notre Dame, I think really shows what they're capable of. Because Cincinnati doesn't have a win like that, but Monmouth does. So you look at Cincinnati from the American, and I respect all conferences around the country, and the American definitely deserves a lot of respect. But in the case of the MAC, with Monmouth, they do too. So if it's up to me, I'm putting Monmouth in. I'm keeping Cincinnati out right now on Bubble Watch here on Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora on wakeupcalldt.com and mixlr.com/wakeupcalldt. There's another team to take a look at on Bubble Watch before I take my next step aside here, where sports meets life, taking a look at the Bubble Watch for the NCAA tournament, Division I men's basketball. And when we look at a team like Michigan, they lost to Connecticut early on in this season, so that's something that hurts them with Connecticut on the bubble as well. They also lost to SMU, another ranked team. So you look at both of those, that's 0-2 to start the season. They lose to Purdue, makes them 0-3. They lose to Iowa, makes them 0-4 against the top 25. They lose to Indiana, makes them 0-6. Michigan State, 0-7. All the way through, they get the win against Purdue. They lose to Maryland, and they lose to Iowa again, and then they beat Indiana. So two wins against the top 25 in numerous opportunities that they didn't take care of business. Right now, Michigan 10-8 coming out of the regular season in the Big Ten, 22 wins and 11 losses overall for this season. Indiana, Michigan State, Maryland, Purdue, Iowa, Wisconsin, and Ohio State are all above Michigan in the Big Ten at the end of the regular season when it comes to conference standings in the Big Ten. So that is something to obviously take a look at. This Michigan team has been trying to get hot at the right time, but you look at what they've allowed to go past them, that they have allowed the likes of the Ohio States, the Wisconsins, the Iowas, the Purdues, the Marylands, Michigan State, Indiana. And in my opinion, Indiana is obviously going to the NCAA tournament. Michigan State as well. Maryland, Purdue most likely. Iowa, Wisconsin, Ohio State, these are all toss-ups, but there's at least four going. If not, Iowa, Wisconsin, I think, is going to take one of those spots. And then you look at Michigan and Ohio State. So basically, in my opinion, 5-6 teams are going to make it out of the Big Ten. But Indiana, Michigan State, Maryland, Purdue, to me, they're in. So now it's up to Michigan to state their case. Now, the positive for Michigan when we talk about a team having to state their case is, like I said, longevity in your tournament. Are you winning? Are you moving through your bracket? And in the case of Michigan, they are doing so. And that is something that is huge for them at this point in the season. Because when you're trying to state your case, the best way to state your case is to be playing all the way up as long as you possibly can towards Selection Sunday. And Michigan has done that. Michigan won their game, their first game that they had against Northwestern in overtime, 72-70. And then they took on number one Indiana, and they defeated Indiana 72-69. And so now they go on to face Purdue, who's above them, and Michigan State is facing Maryland, and all three of those teams are above Michigan right now as far as when you look at overall record and conference record in the Big Ten. Purdue, Michigan State, Maryland, all teams that will get into the NCAA tournament that are standing in the way of Michigan. If Michigan is able to beat Purdue, you're looking at a Michigan team that I think is definitely a lock. But I think when you see them beat a team like Indiana, especially a hot team like Indiana that led in the Big Ten and was the Big Ten regular season champion, that says a lot because they've beaten Indiana now when it matters most. Like I said, what have you done for me lately? They're splitting with Indiana on the season, losing to them earlier on this season by 13, and then coming back and defeating them by 3 in the conference tournament. And whenever you take down the top team in the conference tournament, that is a team you have to look at on the bubble and really pay attention to, because when it comes down to it, the number one teams are the ones that obviously, when you look at it and break it all down, they're supposed to win. They're supposed to be the team that moves forward. So when you have an upset, and it's not a 2-1 or a 3-1 even, but you're looking at a tournament like the Big Ten where Michigan is an 8 seed, taking down a 1 seed. That to me says something. Michigan has been doing good things. Now against the, like I said, against the top 25 overall, things have not been great for Michigan. However, this is a team that has been able to move forward at the right time, and they have an opportunity to avenge some of these losses. And that's going to be something that's going to be huge for this team if they want to move on here. But like I said, the longer that you are playing, the more you can show the committee. And any extra games that you can show the committee is a huge positive as you move on. This team is 2-8 in the 10 games that they've played against the nation's top 25 when teams were ranked in the top 25 at the time of play. 2-8 against the top 25. However, trying to make up for it right now as they move on in the Big Ten tournament. I think as long as Michigan is alive, then they're stating a case. Now they had that huge win against Indiana, but in the Final Four of the Big Ten tournament, if they can defeat Purdue, another team that is above them, and they make it to the championship game of the Big Ten tournament, I think at this point, you have to put Michigan in. I would venture to almost put Michigan in right now, but the thing that sticks out to me that's tough is that 2-8 record against the nation's top 25, and a 2-8 record happening with a lot of those games in your conference against the teams that are standing above you that you're supposed to be taking down, that is the difficult piece of this right now, is the way that Michigan's playing currently is very strong, but the way that they played coming in to the Big Ten tournament is not enough to state their case. So right now they're trying to basically show you, listen, look at what we're doing right now. Look at what we're doing in our tournament. What have you done for me lately? We're a strong team in this moment. And that's something that Michigan, I think, is heavily leaning on. But when you defeat Indiana, now if you lose to Indiana and you're 0-2 against Indiana, and then you look at it overall, you're 1-9 against teams ranked in the top 25 at the time of play, then I think you leave Michigan out. But Michigan all of a sudden has jumped back into it just like UConn because of what they're doing in their conference tournament. People say, you know, why are there all these, you know, some people, why are there so many tournaments? You know, there's 32 conferences in NCAA Division I men's basketball. 31 of them have a conference tournament. The Ivy League does not, but now the Ivy League is going to start having a conference tournament coming up shortly. So you look at all these conference tournaments, and you have to play a 30-game season, then you have to play in the conference tournament, then you play in the NCAA tournament, and I love it. Some people say it's too many games, there's too much going on, depending what conference you play in. You know, if you look at a conference like what the Big East used to be and even what the Big East is now, you look at the AAC, you look at the ACC, you look at the Big Ten, these conferences where anybody can win it at any given time, and when you go up and down the ladder, there's talent everywhere. When you look at conferences like that, even in the MAAC this season, when you're going through those dogfights, they say, you know, that this is going to affect the team. You know, that's what they said about Syracuse. If you make it through, if you win the Big East tournament, then more often than not, you're not going to go win the national championship because it's so difficult in the old Big East to go through the likes when you see Georgetown, Syracuse, Pitt, Notre Dame, UConn, when you see the Villanova, when you see those types of teams in St. John's in certain respects as well. It made it so difficult to get to the end of it. But in the ACC, you look at this as well, top to bottom, people that are capable of winning. But this year, when it all shook out, the top four seeds were the ones that moved on. Notre Dame moved on as a number four. Miami is a number three. As a number two, Virginia. Number one, North Carolina. They all moved on. And North, I think what's different about this year, and we'll talk about this later on in the show, is that North Carolina and Virginia, they're the top two seeds, but they don't look like they have been hurt by being battle-tested. They look just as strong as if not stronger than they were coming into the tournament. And they look like two teams that believe that they should win their tournament moving forward. So I give them a lot of respect for that. But, you know, sometimes people critique the fact that you have to run through these conference tournaments. And what's the point of them when you have a tournament leading into a tournament? Well, the point of it is for teams that have faltered all year long. Remember when conference tournaments didn't take everybody? Remember when some conferences said, you know, if we have 10 teams, we're only going to take 8? If we have 12 teams, we're only going to take 8? To be in those types of situations where in the regular season, yeah, it makes the regular season games more important. But what about some of those teams that are able to pull through? Some of those teams that are in a situation where they're an 8, 9, 10 seed that wouldn't have been a part of their conference tournament, but now the conference tournaments allow everybody to play. Everybody has a fair shake. Everybody has a fair chance to win. And that's what makes it exciting, and that's what makes the at-large bids more exciting when the number one team doesn't win. And in the case of Michigan, they've taken down the number one team in the Big Ten. If they win another game, if they're able to win their Final Four game, I think that this is a team that you definitely have to consider putting in there. So for the teams I've talked about so far, at this point I'm leaving Cincinnati out, I'm putting Monmouth in, and I'm putting Michigan in. And the last team we'll talk about before I step aside here on Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora on Wake Up Call DT.com and MixLR.com/WakeUpCallDT as Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora is live from Washington, D.C. Oregon State out of the Pac-12. They're 9-9 in their conference in the regular season. 19-12 overall. Now, pay attention to that number. 19 wins, 12 losses. Syracuse 19-13. Syracuse is also 9-9 in the ACC, and Oregon State 9-9 in the Pac-12. Now, Oregon State 1-4 against those ranked in the top 25 at the time of play. 1 win and 5 tries. They defeated Oregon prior to Oregon being ranked in the nation's top 25, and then they split with Oregon after losing that second matchup. So they got a win against Oregon, but they're 1-1 against Oregon. Now, 2-0, we're talking about a different thing. They lost to California twice this season, including getting bumped out of the Pac-12 tournament. They split 1-1 with USC. They split 1-1 with UCLA, split 1-1 with Stanford, who was 8-10 in the Pac-12 regular season in the conference, and 15-15 overall. They split 1-1 with Arizona State, who's the second worst team in the Pac-12, finished 5-13 in the Pac-12, 15 wins, 17 losses overall. They did defeat Tulsa when Tulsa was not ranked. So Tulsa also on the bubble. That's why I think it's important to note, because a lot of these teams that are on the bubble, ironically, they don't have to be a part of the same conference, as you see with Syracuse and St. Bonnie's, and you see in the case with Tulsa and Oregon State. It's funny how the teams that get toward the end of this thing and are all fighting for 4 spots or 8 spots, and there's 12 of them or 15 from season to season, talking about 12 different teams today. It's funny how we get to this point. It's ironic how we get to this point where the teams that are fighting to get those last spots are the teams that actually went head-to-head, even if they're not a part of the same conference. Non-conference schedule, happen to have a game against each other, that game becomes all the more important when you got a good resume and a good resume, and you say, okay, well, A beat B, so these two good resumes, give them an opportunity to get in. But we only got one spot, and A beat B, or B beat A. So we got to give it to the team that won the head-to-head. And that makes it easier, in my opinion, if they won the head-to-head and they have very similar records, very similar against the top 25, very similar throughout their conference and what they've been able to do. In the case of Oregon State, I give them credit for defeating Oregon. But losing to California twice, that's something that works against them. Splitting 1-1 with USC is another team that's on the bubble, and I think that that works against them. And splitting 1-1 with UCLA, this is a team that I don't see making the tournament, that I don't think should make the tournament this season. Stanford and Arizona State, you're looking at two teams that were either at 500 at the end of the season overall or worse. 15-15 for Stanford once again. Arizona State 15-17. Arizona State, second worst team in the Pac-12. Only one team below Arizona State when everything shook out at the end of the regular season. So to split 1-1 with Arizona State and split 1-1 with Stanford and split 1-1 with UCLA, that means you're 500. You're 3-3 against the teams you should be beating if you want to make a case to get into the NCAA tournament. So for Oregon State, I find it difficult right now to put them in because of the fact that some of these games that they have let go, that they have let slip through, are games that you have to win. And in the Pac-12 tournament, like I said, if you stay alive, then there's more things to be said. If a team is able to stay alive and move forward, then you can obviously make cases for those teams. Now, they defeated Arizona State head-to-head in their first game of the Pac-12 tournament. Oregon State did as the sixth seed going up against number 11 Arizona State. But then they went on to their next game and were defeated by Cal, the number 3 seed. Now, that is their second loss of the season to Cal. And Cal was able to move on, but Cal was defeated by Utah. So you look at that. The team that beat you didn't even move on to the championship game. So now you have Oregon, the number 1 seed, and Utah, the number 2 seed, which is the worst-case scenario for any team in the Pac-12 that's trying to get noticed, is to have the 1 and the 2 advance to the championship game of the conference tournament. But that's what's happened for the Pac-12. And with Oregon State, I don't see letting them go forward. I know that the win against Oregon, people will say, you know, that's the win, Dan. That's the one to focus on. But they split with Oregon. Oregon State split with Oregon. Yes, they got them once, but they were 1-1. And I know that Oregon is a tough out right now. I know that they're a tough team to play. They're the number 1 seed going in from the regular season in the Pac-12 to the conference tournament. They make it to the conference tournament championship. But Oregon didn't move far in this. Oregon advanced to the quarterfinals after the first round game. They won one game, and they got bumped out. They didn't make it to the Final Four of the Pac-12, and they didn't make it to the championship game. And as much as that Oregon win is nice, as Oregon got better and got ranked in the top 25, Oregon State lost to them that second time around. And I think the losses to Arizona State, Stanford, and UCLA, you're not going 2-0 against these teams. If you say, okay, you know what? Oregon State split with Oregon, and then they're 2-0 against USC, 2-0 against UCLA, 2-0 against Stanford, 2-0 against Arizona State. In the regular season, if they didn't see Arizona State in the conference tournament, they're 0-1 against Arizona State, the second worst team in the Pac-12. So, to me, Oregon State, the splitting with USC, UCLA, Stanford, Arizona, 4-4 there, and then losing to California twice, so 4-6 in those games, that, to me, stands right up with, well, Oregon State split with Oregon. Well, that's nice. They split with Oregon, but in 10 matchups that they could have made a case to win and move forward into the NCAA tournament, they lost 6 of those 10. And when you're below 500 in those big games that you're supposed to be winning to make a case for yourself, that's where I find it hard for Oregon State. So at this point, I have Oregon State left out of this bubble watch as far as getting into the NCAA tournament. So I don't see them remaining here in the bubble. I think their bubble may have burst, might have popped. Now, if Oregon wins, then the case will be made, well, Oregon won their conference tournament. They're number 1 coming out of the Pac-12 in the regular season. They're the number 1 seed in the conference tournament. They're ranked in the top 25. And remember, Oregon State defeated them? But once again, they were 1-1. And when you look at the bulk of work throughout the entire season, which I'm doing with each of these teams, Oregon State's bulk of work works against them. And with a team that is 19-12 overall, you bring in a 19-13 Syracuse team, and Syracuse has better wins, Texas A&M and Duke especially, than Oregon State defeating Oregon. So when you go head-to-head like that too, I can't see putting Oregon State in right now. So in my bubble watch here on Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora on WakeUpCallDT.com as well as MixLR.com/WakeUpCallDT live from Washington, D.C. So far, I have gone through four of my teams out of the 12 that are on my bubble watch, and I have kept Cincinnati out, put Monmouth in, put in Michigan, potentially, definitely, if they defeat Purdue. But right now, I think Michigan's one of those teams I could see getting in, and keeping Oregon State out. So two in, two out. I'll take a step aside here, and when I spin back around, we'll talk about the likes of Pittsburgh, St. Bonaventure, St. Mary's, and so much more coming up here in my bubble watch live from Washington, D.C., as we edge closer and closer out of championship week into Selection Sunday and the NCAA tournament. March Madness is upon us. It's already started. And as we move forward, we'll see what teams are going to be making it in, and I'll be giving my analysis of some of those teams coming up next.
A live game day experience unlike anything you've ever seen is at Orange Crate Brewing Company on 721 South Krause Avenue in Syracuse, New York, down the road from the Carrier Dome, and at the Orange Crate Express on 309 East Seneca Street in Manlius, New York, the former Ugly Duckling. You're pre-gaming with us at Orange Crate Brewing Company on 721 South Krause Avenue in Syracuse for all Syracuse Orange football and men's basketball home games. And for the away games, you're pre-gaming with us at Orange Crate Express on 309 East Seneca Street in Manlius, New York. Wake Up Call Game Day Live. Whether it's a night out on the town, going out and grabbing a drink, or coming out and seeing the game, you're going to Orange Crate Brewing Company on 721 South Krause Avenue in Syracuse and the Orange Crate Express at 309 East Seneca Street in Manlius. Pre-game with Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora and our special guests throughout the Syracuse Orange football and Syracuse Orange men's basketball seasons. All the great flavors of Utica Pizza Company right at your doorstep. It's a Utica thing. Family-owned restaurant on wheels for festivals, parties, receptions, and more, including lunch stops right by your office building. Call It's a Utica Thing and have them come to your next event. 315-738-8946. That's 315-738-8946. The flavors of Utica Pizza Company, authentic recipes right by you with an authentic menu. You choose the menu, you choose the place. Call now to reserve. It's a Utica Thing, the family-owned restaurant on wheels. 315-738-8946. That's 315-738-8946.
Gear up with the real deal at Dreissig Apparel, the best place for you to go when it comes to finding your image, creating what people are going to see and learn about you before they even meet you. At DreissigApparel.com, that's D-R-E-I-S-S-I-G Apparel.com, you have the opportunity to not only outfit your team well, but also to outfit your business, outfit your event, outfit your breast cancer walk. When it comes to looking good and feeling comfortable in your own skin, the only place to go is Dreissig Apparel. D-R-E-I-S-S-I-G Apparel.com. Gear up for what you need for your team, business, or event. To look professional, look good, and feel good, outfit yourself at DreissigApparel.com. That's D-R-E-I-S-S-I-G Apparel.com. The only place to gear up with the real deal. What's the universal language of a fan? Clapping your hands. With Fan Hands, the ultimate sports fan accessory, found on fanhands.com. That's FANHANDS.com. I can take that and enhance that for you, make it even better, even stronger than it's been before. Be the loudest fan without ever having to lose your voice by choosing one of 11 different colors, always in stock on fanhands.com. And all you have to do is clap your hands, something you've done every single game since you were a kid. FanHands.com. Get your favorite pair of fan hands right now. Find your team color, slip them on, and start cheering on your favorite team with 11 different colors always in stock on FanHands.com, where you'll find the ultimate sports fan accessory. FanHands.com. That's FanHands.com. Real fans wear fan hands.
I'm George Townsend of Honda City with some good advice when buying a new car. The true cost of owning a new car is determined by the appraised value when you trade it. No vehicle appraises higher than a Honda. Next, look for low APRs and deep discounts. You also want low maintenance costs and great fuel economy. That's why my advice to you is to buy a new Honda. Looking pre-owned, visit our Honda Certified Used Car Center. Honda City, 7140 Henry Clay Boulevard, Liverpool, or HondaCity-CNY.com.
It would be a pity if you don't shop.
There's more than meets the eye at Utica Pizza Company on 628 South Main Street in North Syracuse, New York. Located in the Main's Plaza near Sweetheart Corners at the intersection of Route 11 and Taft Road, Utica Pizza Company is the proud home of homemade recipes that have withstood the test of time from generation to generation to reach your plate today. Dine in or get takeout by calling 315-214-3060. That's 315-214-3060 for takeout from Utica Pizza Company, which is now the proud home of the Wake Up Call special, Chicken Salt and Boca, available 7 days a week for lunch and dinner. Go to Utica Pizza Company Monday through Sunday, open for you on 628 South Main Street in North Syracuse, New York. Located in the Main's Plaza near Sweetheart Corners at the intersection of Route 11 and Taft Road.
Welcome back here to Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora on WakeUpCallDT.com, your one-stop sports shop, and on MixLR.com/WakeUpCallDT. We're here talking about the Bubble Watch and the morning menu proudly provided by the Market Diner, 2100 Park Street in Syracuse, New York, in the regional market across from Destiny USA. Make sure you make your way over there if you're going to see a movie, going shopping at the mall, getting off the train, getting off the bus, whatever it may be. If you're going over to the farmer's market, flea market this weekend, or if you're just going for a drive, make sure you make your way over to Market Diner, 2100 Park Street in Syracuse, New York, in the regional market across from Destiny USA, the proud home of the Dan Tortora special, a Belgian waffle cut in half with bacon, egg, and cheese omelet inside of it. You can eat it like a sandwich, or you can cut it up and put syrup on it. I think right now, syrup on it, cutting it up, is the winner of the people that have had it so far. I want to thank you all for being so supportive and so wonderful with the Market Diner. Started talking about the Market Diner here on the show in February. You've been going over there, flocking to it, enjoying the food. I truly appreciate it. Tony and his staff do a great job, so they appreciate it too. Continue to support the Market Diner, the only diner that you need to be going to, and the only home of the Dan Tortora special, Central New York. Make sure you find your way to the Market Diner across from Destiny USA in the regional market in Syracuse, New York. Continuing on here with the morning menu, I'm doing my bubble watch. I'm going through 12 teams that I think here are on the bubble that are worth noting, 12 teams that I've been paying attention to here as we come down the stretch, coming out of championship week and going into the selection show on Selection Sunday, Sunday, March 13th. So as it stands right now, Cincinnati is the first team that I talked about, going in alphabetical order here. I don't have Cincinnati in, I have Monmouth in, I have Michigan in, and I don't have Oregon State in. So 2-2 right now of the four I've talked about so far. Now it's time to take a look at the Pittsburgh Panthers. Pitt Panthers on the bubble here on Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora. Their big wins are at Notre Dame and Duke by 14. They also defeated Virginia Tech by 19, but then lost to them on the road. So they split 1-1 with Virginia Tech, but they were able to get the victory over Virginia Tech to at least split with them. So like I said, splits aren't the best, but it's better than 0-2. And in the case of Pitt, keeping a team like Virginia Tech at bay when they did in the regular season in the ACC, very helpful, because Virginia Tech was a team that if they had won another game, if they had found a way to beat Miami and get to the Final Four of the ACC tournament, you're talking about a team that would have made a case and been right there with Pittsburgh, potentially taking Pittsburgh's spot. Pitt also has the opportunity that they've given themselves by being 3-0 against Syracuse. It's very hard to defeat a team twice in a season, let alone three times. And Pitt did that against Syracuse at home, at Syracuse, and on neutral court in the ACC tournament. Those three wins are three damning losses for Syracuse when you put them head-to-head with Pittsburgh. But Pitt also lost by 21 at North Carolina in the regular season, and they lost to North Carolina coming out of the regular season and going in. When you look at Pitt in the ACC tournament after defeating Syracuse in the second round, which was their first game, to advance on to the quarterfinals and lose to North Carolina in that game, they lost by 17. So they lose by 21 against North Carolina the first time, 17 the second time around, a little bit better, 4 points better in the loss. However, it's still a double-digit loss, but North Carolina is head and shoulders above a lot of teams out there, as well as Virginia, which is what makes the ACC tournament finale, which I'm down here live from Washington, D.C. covering this week. So those two losses to North Carolina, those hurt you. They hurt you a lot by a combined 38 points when you look at it, a 21-point loss and a 17-point loss. And it took two overtimes for North Carolina to defeat Wake Forest, which is a team that was the second worst in the ACC. It was the 13th seed, Wake Forest, the 13th seed of 14 seeds in the ACC tournament. And they lost to the ACC top three, North Carolina, Virginia, and Miami. So if Pitt had won any of those games, then Pitt is definitely locking themselves in. However, I still think that Pitt's going to get into this tournament because they defeated Notre Dame on the road. They defeated Duke by double digits. They were able to split with Virginia Tech, and they defeated Syracuse three times. So, you know, I think it's kind of, if you do some of those things right, it's forgivable if you're not beating Virginia and North Carolina, because a lot of teams are not projected to do so. These are two teams in the ACC that I think are number one seeds, and I think making it to the ACC championship game, they are both making a case for themselves, Virginia and North Carolina, to say whoever wins this game, especially if it's competitive, if it goes to overtime, if it's down the wire, if it's a four-point win for somebody, that both of these teams are definite, to me, locks to be number one seeds in the NCAA Division I men's basketball tournament. So Pitt, like I said, you look at how they played against those teams. If they had beaten North Carolina, Virginia, or Miami, then they're definitely, definitely, definitely in. But I think they're definitely in with what they've done so far. And like I said, going up against Syracuse and beating them three times in a row in a season is an extremely difficult feat to accomplish for any team, to defeat a team three times. And Pitt did that. So as of right now, Pittsburgh, when you look at them and you look at their record and what they've done overall, coming out of the regular season in the ACC, they were 9-9, but they have 21 wins to 11 losses. 21 wins, Syracuse has 19. So when you look at that type of separation, Pittsburgh looks nice in that respect, and they defeated Syracuse head-to-head, and they jumped Syracuse and were able to put themselves in a better spot. Syracuse had opportunities to get better positioning in the ACC. Pittsburgh took care of business. Syracuse did not. And in that case, Pittsburgh, to me, is in the tournament. So they will join, in my bubble watch, Monmouth as well as Michigan getting in the tournament, with Oregon State being left out and Cincinnati, in my opinion. Now to take a look at St. Bonaventure from the Atlantic 10, 14-4 in their conference in the regular season, 22 wins to 8 losses overall so far. They've only faced one team ranked in the top 25 at the time of play. That's Dayton, and they defeated them. St. Bonaventure winning that game. But they also split with Dayton. So this is another case, like Oregon State to Oregon. Oregon State, the only team that they defeat in the top 25 is Oregon. So Oregon State gets them, but they split with them. And in the case of St. Bonnie's, they're not playing a lot of top 25 teams throughout their season, non-conference and in the conference especially. So when they get to this game against Dayton, they defeat them when Dayton was in the top 15 as far as ranking in the nation for NCAA Division I men's basketball, but they lost to Dayton after that. So the victory is what have you done for me lately? They've won against them most recently. So this is where it works conversely with Oregon to Oregon's, when you look at Oregon State to Oregon. Oregon State splits with Oregon. They win the first game when Oregon's not ranked. They lose the second game when they are. In the case of Dayton going up against St. Bonaventure, St. Bonaventure doesn't defeat Dayton the first time around, but gets them the second time around. And that, I think, is an important thing to take a look at when you look at St. Bonaventure and what they've been able to do so far this season. And that game against Dayton was on the road, and they defeated them by 7 when they were ranked. When they lost to Dayton, Dayton was not ranked. So again, we take a look at Oregon State in comparison to St. Bonaventure. Oregon State has 1 win against the top 25 team. But the team wasn't ranked in the top 25 when they defeated them, and they lost the second time around. St. Bonaventure has 1 win against the top 25 ranked team at the time of play. And when they went up against Dayton, they defeated Dayton when Dayton was ranked in the top 15 on the road. Most recently, the game they lost against Dayton was beforehand. So as Dayton got better during the season, that's when St. Bonaventure was able to beat them the second time around. So what have you done for me lately? St. Bonnie's, when you look at their win and you look at Oregon State's, St. Bonnie's doing more with what have you done for me lately, winning most recently, splitting the games most recently, and defeating Dayton when Dayton was a ranked team, as opposed to what happened with Oregon State losing to Oregon before Oregon was a ranked team. Now, St. Bonnie's lost their first Atlantic 10 tournament game that they competed in this season, a 3-seed loss to 6-seeded Davidson. So that's one thing that's going to work against you. I think if it comes down to St. Bonnie's and Oregon State, I know that Oregon State is in the Pac-12. I understand that. I understand the fact that you look at the Pac-12 compared to the A-10, and the Pac-12 gets more respect. Even though the A-10 has a bunch of teams that play spoiler every single season, if you don't believe me, you look at the likes of Dayton, VCU, St. Joseph's, Davidson, Richmond. These are all teams that have been able to pull off upsets in the past. So these are teams that are very dangerous when you get into the NCAA Division I men's basketball tournament. I think if I'm looking at St. Bonnie's and I'm looking at Oregon State right now, 19-12 overall, 9-9 in their conference, 1 win against the top 25. And when you look at St. Bonaventure, 14-4 in their conference, 22-8 overall, so 3 more wins overall than Oregon State, and they defeated a top 25 ranked team most recently. So for St. Bonnie's, I know that the factor always against them is, Dan, they're in the A-10. They're not in the ACC, they're not in the Big East, they're not in the SEC, they're not in the American, they're not in the Pac-12, they're not in the Big 12, they're not in the Big 10. I get it. But St. Bonnie's, as a 14 seed, is a dangerous team. I think if you see Oregon State in the tournament, I would expect, I actually lean more toward St. Bonaventure pulling off an upset than Oregon State if both were a 14 seed in the tournament. So I know that for some people, Oregon State is a virtual lock, but I don't see it in their scheduling. I don't see it in the teams that they've beaten. I know that they play in the Pac-12, but the Pac-12 this year with UCLA and with Stanford and even with USC and different teams that were a part of it, they're not as strong. They're not as strong as I believe they've been in the past. Yes, Oregon is having a good season, and Utah is having a good season, but Arizona State hasn't come through, UCLA hasn't done well, Stanford hasn't done well, Washington not doing that great, USC not doing that much better than Oregon State, both 9-9 at the end of the regular season in the Pac-12. So, outside of Oregon, Utah, Arizona, and Cal, you're not seeing a lot coming out of here. And some of these teams are still fighting for that opportunity to get in. And Oregon State lost to bottom feeders and that in their conference. And in that case, that makes it difficult to put a team like Oregon State in. But when you look at St. Bonnie's, you look at their bottom feeders of LaSalle, St. Louis, and George Mason. When you go through their schedule and you look at LaSalle and say they defeated St. Louis most recently, they lost to LaSalle, and they defeated George Mason. And when you're in those scenarios, you look at their record against their bottom feeders, and you look at Oregon State's record against their bottom feeders, and you ask yourself, who's doing better? Oregon State lost a bunch of games against teams that were below them in the Pac-12. 6 losses in 10 tries against those teams, against the likes of the Stanfords and the UCLAs and so on and so forth. But when you look at what St. Bonnie's has been able to do, St. Bonaventure doesn't always put together a strong season. They don't always get that work done. Now, they've lost to, they've split with Duquesne, I should say. Against UMass, they won most recently against UMass, and then they won earlier on in the season as well. So they're 2-0 against UMass, who's below them. So when you look at the way that they've gone head-to-head, they've done better head-to-head against the teams that are below them, where you look at a team like Oregon State that's faltered against teams that are below them. So that's something that I know that the case is going to be made, that Oregon State beat Oregon, and St. Bonnie's win over Davidson is not the same as Oregon State's win over Oregon. However, I think when you look at conference play, overall wins, and what St. Bonnie's has been able to do to reside right up there with Dayton and VCU and a strong St. Joseph's team that's made a push this season as well, I think that you have to give respect where respect is deserved. And where the respect is deserved, where it's earned this season for me, is I'm looking at St. Bonnie's and I'm saying, you know what? Yes, they lost to Syracuse, and that's going to affect them in the head-to-head. That's definitely going to affect them in the head-to-head. But at the same time, this is a team that has found a way to become relevant this season when typically they are not. So would I put in St. Bonnie's over Syracuse? No. But would I challenge a team like Oregon State when you look at St. Bonnie's? Yes. Would I challenge a team like Cincinnati when you look at St. Bonnie's? Potentially. Potentially you can look at that as well. The teams that have advanced to the A-10 championship, or pardon me, the A-10 Final Four are number one Dayton, number four St. Joseph's, number two VCU, and number six Davidson. So you look at Dayton, the number one seed, that was a split with St. Bonnie's, and you have St. Joseph's and VCU that have advanced to the Final Four. And when we take a look at St. Bonnie's and what St. Bonnie's has been able to put together, when you look at teams like VCU as well as St. Joseph's, I want to take a look at these games because these are very, very important. Most recently, they defeated St. Joseph's, and they defeated them earlier on in the season. So they're 2-0 against St. Joe's, who's advanced to the Final Four of the A-10. And against VCU, when you take a look at this matchup between VCU as well as St. Bonaventure, we look at VCU and look at the fact that they did lose a game to VCU, 84-76, and then the St. Joe's games, 2-0. So 2-1 against St. Joe's and VCU when you look at these teams that have advanced forward. You look at number 2-seeded VCU and number 4-seeded St. Joe's and number 1-seeded Dayton. They're 1-1 against Dayton. They're 0-1 against VCU, so that's 1-2. And then 2-0 against St. Joe's, that's 3-2. So 3-2 against the teams that were put in the top 4 seeds, number 1 Dayton, number 2 VCU, number 4 St. Joe's in the A-10 tournament. They're 3-2 against those teams. So I think that states a case for St. Bonnie's to potentially get in. So I put them on the cusp of the bubble. I put them kind of leaning in, but potentially could be out. I want to take a look at some of these other teams to talk about. St. Mary's in the West Coast Conference, WCC, 15-3 in their conference, 27-5 overall, number one seed in the WCC tournament, advanced to the finale, lost to number two Gonzaga. They have historic, wonderful, memorable games pretty much every single season. If St. Mary's is playing Gonzaga, it's usually late at night at 11 o'clock, but I'm watching it because it's great basketball. Split. It's one of the greatest rivalries that we don't talk about. Split 1-1 with Gonzaga this season. No wins against the top 25, but didn't play anybody in the top 25. They lost to Cal before Cal was ranked in the top 25 early on in the season. So St. Mary's bulk of work, they don't have a win against the top 25. And they didn't win their conference tournament. But St. Mary's is a team with 27 victories. They're a team that has shown that they are more than capable of going into the tournament. And I think that they're more than capable of going into the tournament and winning a game in the tournament. I think St. Mary's is a dangerous team. If you made St. Mary's a 6 seed or a 4 seed or a 5 seed, they're a dangerous team. If you make them a 10 seed, they're a dangerous team. And when I look at a team and I say, okay, you know what, in these scenarios with St. Mary's in the West Coast Conference and St. Bonaventure in the A-10, I know that the conferences don't get as much respect as other conferences around the country, but this is my opportunity to say to you that I understand that they're not playing Kentucky, and they're not playing Texas A&M, and they're not playing the likes of, you know, a hot UConn right now. They're not in these scenarios. They're not in these situations. They're not playing Virginia. They're not playing North Carolina. They're not playing Notre Dame. They're not playing Duke. I get it. I understand where people are coming from. They're not playing Villanova. But when I look at a team and I look at their bulk of work and I look at their record, you know, we're talking about St. Bonnie's single-digit losses this season. St. Mary's single-digit losses this season. Bonnie's, 22 wins. Not 18, not 19, not even 20. St. Mary's, 27 wins. 15 wins out of 18 tries in their conference. St. Bonnie's, 14 wins out of 18 tries in their conference in the regular seasons, respectively for the WCC for St. Mary's and the A-10 for St. Bonaventure. I look at bulk of work overall. It's not their fault if the other teams don't take care of business, and it's not their fault if you're in a conference where teams are not getting ranked in the top 25. That's not your fault. If you take care of business and you win games, and more often than not, you're winning those games, and if you're not at the top of your conference, you're right there, or you're defeating the teams that are on the top, and you have an above 500 record in conference and overall, and you have 20-plus wins, these are teams that are very dangerous in the tournament. I think St. Bonnie's is a dangerous out in the tournament. I think St. Mary's is a team that could win a couple games in the tournament, depending on how they're seated and where they're seated. They were the number one team in the WCC going into their tournament, conference tournament. And they made it to the finale. And the team they lost to was the number two team in Gonzaga. And the team that they lost to in Gonzaga is this huge rival that they've had for years in the WCC. So in my opinion, St. Mary's gets in. I know they don't have a win against the top 25, but when I look at the rest of the bubble, when I look at the teams that I'm focusing on here in my bubble watch on Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora, when I look at the Pittsburghs, and I look at the Cincinnati's, and I look at the UConn's, and the Oregon State's, and the Vanderbilt's, and when I look at those teams, and then I see St. Mary's to me has made enough of a case to get in. And I truly believe, and this is part of my bubble watch, this goes into it too, do I believe they can win a game in the NCAA tournament? Because if you're on the bubble watch, but I think you're going to get blown out in the tournament, you're not even going to compete, then it's not worth talking about. I don't care if you have a win or two against the top 25. If you're not going anywhere, doesn't matter. There's a team that could have 8 wins on their season and 2 of them are against the top 25. It doesn't mean they're going to go anywhere. St. Bonnie's and St. Mary's are tough outs. So for these two teams, I potentially can see them in. But if I have to choose between St. Bonnie's and St. Mary's, I'm choosing St. Mary's in this case. Moving on here in Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora's coverage of the Bubble Watch. We're going to take a step aside here in a moment. But before we do so, continuing on here to talk about Syracuse on the bubble and what this team looks like currently. Now, the Syracuse Orange have had plenty of opportunities to win. They've had plenty of opportunities to state their case. They've had plenty of opportunities to make right on their wrongs, but they haven't done so. And this has been a huge detriment to the team. They have not been able to silence the case against them. And this is something that has followed them throughout the entire season. They've been in control of their own destiny over and over and over again, and they have responded by being in control of their own destiny by giving up that control to somebody else, handing it over to somebody else. And this has been a very, very difficult thing for Syracuse fans, who many of you listen to the show and follow the show, and I appreciate that. On wakeupcalldt.com, the hub of everything with Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora. It's available 24/7. What you want and so much more. At facebook.com/wakeupcalldt, and Twitter at calldt, C-A-L-L-D-T. So I thank you for your support, for listening to the show. Everybody listens to the show. But when you look at Syracuse, 9-9 in the ACC in the regular season, 19-13 overall right now. This is a team who had an opportunity to show that they could win a game against a team that they had lost to numerous times, when they went up against Pittsburgh. You got Pittsburgh on the ropes at the Peterson. And I don't care if Pittsburgh has one win or 15 wins at the time you play him in the Peterson. It is very difficult to play in the Peterson. For whatever reason, it's very, very difficult to play in the Peterson. It's difficult to play Syracuse in the Dome. But when they went to the Peterson, Syracuse let it get away. They fumbled through their last few possessions. They made numerous mistakes. They turned the ball over late and gave up points. They could have made it a free throw game. Instead, they made it a loss that was substantial, a loss that was multiple possessions. Syracuse went down and weren't talking offensively, fumbling with the ball, not knowing where to go, looking around while you're dribbling and not being able to hold on to it. Syracuse looked ugly to end the game that they played so strongly against Pittsburgh for the majority of the game. They didn't play 40 minutes. And then Syracuse had an opportunity against Pittsburgh at home in the Carrier Dome, and they didn't play 40 minutes. And then they had an opportunity in the ACC tournament in an 8-9 matchup to face Pittsburgh and to make a case for themselves. And yes, Trevor Cooney missed the shot, but it was more than that. There wasn't communication on offense, again. There wasn't offensive rebounding, again. There wasn't boxing out and defensive rebounding, again. There wasn't enough transition game, again. There wasn't enough people getting their hands up, moving around, and being fast on defense and trying to silence the lanes in certain areas, again. And there wasn't enough penetration, again, on offense. Everything that has plagued Syracuse all season long are there sins that they have taken in to the ACC tournament and got bumped out of the ACC tournament. I am not surprised that they lost. They lost 72-71, but the way that they played, they could have lost 72-62. Syracuse has not learned from their past mistakes. They have not learned from what they needed to do in the beginning of the season. You have to rebound, defensively and offensively. The best teams in the country, championship caliber teams, get offensive rebounds. Championship caliber teams talk on offense. Championship caliber teams penetrate and go for the shot that's closest to the rim before they settle for the three. Those are championship teams. Look at Virginia. Look at North Carolina. They play around the rim. They get the rebounds. They can test you on everything. They are very physical. They attack the basket. When they're up by 15, they attack the basket. When they're up by 15, they want to get a foul. They're not lackadaisical. They're not just dribbling around hoping to God that somebody gets open. When Syracuse plays on offense, more often than not, they look like 1 vs. 5. They're just dribbling around the court, looking around, sometimes not even looking at the basket, and wondering what's going on. Don't have the wherewithal of the shot clock. And I'm not just talking about the game where the shot clock was an issue in the ACC tournament. I'm talking about overall. Syracuse's blunders, their offensive and defensive lack of rebounding, their lack of penetrating, their lack of quickness, their lack of passing, their lack of communication has all followed them into where they stand right now. Syracuse could have had a win against North Carolina on both occasions. Could have had a win against Pittsburgh on 3 occasions. They could have had a win against Miami if they played defense in the second half. They could have had a win against Louisville if they played defense in the second half. They could have had a victory against Clemson if they made a free throw. But it doesn't just come down to one play. It comes down to the fact that offensive rebounding, probably bigger than anything else, has been something that Syracuse has absolutely, positively refused to do. For some reason, they don't think that it's necessary. For some reason, they're not going after it. So, this is the issue that Syracuse is faced with. You have a bunch of games that they could have come away with, and they did not. The shoulda, woulda, coulda doesn't translate into victories. And that has been an issue with the Syracuse Orange this season. When you go throughout their regular season, the games that they had in their grasp got away. Pitt got away by a point. At Florida State, got away by 5. At North Carolina, could have tied the game, instead decided to go inside, try and get the foul, try and go to the basket. Understandable play. You can argue either way that Mike Benajay going into the basket instead of going after the 3 or waiting for the rest of the team to get down the court. But when I look at this, I would have set up a play. Against Pittsburgh, I would have set up a play. You look at Louisville and how strong Syracuse started out offensively and then just lost control. Games where Syracuse just lost control. Now, they defeated Notre Dame when Notre Dame was ranked in the top 25, and Notre Dame is a tough team to play. I put Monmouth in because of their victory over Notre Dame. And Syracuse defeated Duke at Cameron Indoor, where you know the calls don't normally go in favor of the visiting team. So those two wins are huge for the Syracuse Orange. Huge. They defeated Connecticut. And Connecticut has found their way back into prominence, potentially, on the bubble. And they defeated Texas A&M. So Syracuse's four wins are very substantial. If they had just beaten Pittsburgh one time, they would have been more competitive against North Carolina. Syracuse has played North Carolina twice this season. They lost by 5 most recently. And before that, they lost by 9. Pittsburgh lost by 21 and 17. So I do believe it would have been more of an exciting game to watch for ACC tournament fans here in Washington, D.C., where Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora is broadcasting live from this week. It would have been a lot more exciting for people to see than a 17-point victory where Pittsburgh just second half disappeared. But when you look at this Syracuse team, this is a team that is very, very difficult when you're arguing for or against. Because 19-13 is a disgustingly ugly record. And last time they were 19-13 in 96-97 season, they didn't make the NCAA tournament. What have you done for me lately? They've defeated NC State. That's what they've done for you lately. They've lost 5 out of their last 6 games. The games they won before that were at BC, who was the worst team in the ACC. They defeated Virginia Tech at home. That was a big win. They defeated Georgia Tech. That was a big win for them as well. They defeated Notre Dame. And they defeated Florida State, but now they split with Florida State. So they were 5-0 and then finished the season 1-5. And I'm telling you right now, if Syracuse defeated Pittsburgh in the ACC tournament, Syracuse is in their spot. So I agree with that. That the moment that Pitt defeated Syracuse, Pitt jumped in their grave. I agree with that. I absolutely 100% agree with that. Now, I think Syracuse can beat anybody on any given night. And that's not because I'm from Syracuse. And it's not because I cover the team. I believe when you look at the talent, if Trevor Cooney is making 4 or 5 threes, Malachi Richardson is doing what he does inside and outside, right? You got Frank Howard with his vision and good decisions most of the time. He made a bad decision against Pittsburgh, but he's a true freshman. If he makes one mistake a game, that's pretty darn good. Tyler Lydon with his ability to shoot the three. You look at Daywon Coleman's gotten better inside. If Tyler Roberson ever decides to get a double-double again, the team's 6-0 when he does so. So when we look at all of those pieces and Mike Benajay, 32 games, 32 times in double figures. Not many people do that. So a credit to Mike Benajay and what he's been able to do and his shooting ability. His shot has gotten better. He will translate to professional basketball. So this team is very, very dangerous when you look at them. But the fact that they let 2 get away to North Carolina and 3 get away to Pittsburgh, those have been the ones that are sticking against you. You have 4 big-time wins and you have 5 losses. And any one of those, if it turned into a win, if any one of those 5 losses is a victory, all of a sudden Syracuse is in the tournament. If they had 1 win against Pitt, especially most recently, they're in the tournament. If they split with North Carolina, they're in the tournament. So this is a difficult place to put Syracuse. Now, if it's between Syracuse and St. Bonaventure, I put in Syracuse because they beat St. Bonnie's. If it's between Syracuse and Oregon State, I put in Syracuse. If it's between Syracuse and Cincinnati, I put in Syracuse. But Monmouth has made a case, and Michigan has made a case. And Pittsburgh, obviously, you can't put in over Syracuse. And St. Mary's is a team I think is going to get in because I think they're going to be a dangerous team. Even though they don't have games against the top 25 and they're not playing in conferences like the ACC, I still think that St. Mary's is a very dangerous team. So we're going to take a step aside here on my bubble watch. When I come back, I'm going to be joined by Syracuse Orange men's basketball assistant coach and former player Adrian Autry. he's going to be on the show with me. So, Adrian, you're only going to hear him here one-on-one with me live from Washington, D.C., Adrian Autry, Syracuse Orange men's basketball alum and current assistant coach to Jim Boeheim. He's going to be talking with me about what it's like to be inside of this program and see everything that's happening. I've been talking about Syracuse all throughout the week and all throughout the season. Now you're going to hear from an assistant coach that has that direct line to the players, direct line to practice, direct line to the games, and has his sight and his vision on what could happen in the selection process. That's all coming up here in just a few moments. Adrian Autry when I come back on Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora.
The Market Diner prides itself on bringing the local community fresh ingredients that are better than going elsewhere. Open for breakfast, served all day, lunch and dinner with daily specials. The Market Diner is located at the Regional Market on Park Street, right across from Destiny USA. For takeout, call 315-474-5247. The Market Diner. Local. Fresh. Better.
Dan! This bouncing on these trampolines is so much fun!
I know, why didn't we come here sooner?
I don't ever want to leave.
We don't have to, we're kind of doing the commercial like this right now.
And it seems like it's great for all ages.
It is fun for all ages.
I'd like to have my birthday party here.
They have birthday parties here all the time. You can dunk, you can play dodgeball. Wait, Nick, duck! You could go into the obstacle course. There's so many things to do here, Nick. And it's open all year round.
This seems pretty safe, too.
It is safe. It's for people of all ages. You can bring your family here. It's great for your body. It's great to get off some steam. It's great to have a good time. And all you have to do to book an event is call 315-948-3100.
Wait, Dan, what's that number again? I was bouncing.
315-948-3100.
Actually, is there a website I could go to?
Yeah, the website's getairsyracuse.com. Just like we're doing right now, we're getting some air.
All right, Dan, I'm going to get more air, and then I'm going to go to that website to check out what other fun things I could do at Air Syracuse.
Yeah, you can find out more at getairsyracuse.com. You should really make your way over here. It's located right across from Driver's Village, 7687 Frontage Road in Cicero.
Get hopping!
Get air!
Carvel DeWitt, it's what happy tastes like. Do you know why? Because we make ice cream. Creamy, rich, flavorful ice cream. Not yogurt or iced milk like some of our competitors. Ice cream. Fresh, by hand, daily. For the calorie conscious, we have something new for you. Our new Carvelite. Same great flavor, creaminess, and texture of our regular ice cream with only 35 calories an ounce. So whether you want an ice cream cake, flying saucer, dasher, carvelanche, hard or soft ice cream, we will satisfy your craving with our fresh, handmade regular or new Carvelite ice cream. Carvel DeWitt. It's what happy tastes like.
Clothing that will change with you without you having to change. DreissigLady.com, DreissIg Lady.com, with the bamboo line relaxed fit clothing as well as the athletic fit clothing. DreissigLady.com is fit for any woman, any time of the day, anywhere. Whatever you're doing, whatever your day commands of you, command yourself to feel comfortable in Dreissig Lady Apparel. DreissIg Lady.com. For all the women out there, feel good in what you're wearing and don't feel like you have to constantly change throughout the day. Whether you're a stay-at-home mom, a business owner, going for a jog, going for a meeting, or just relaxing at home, Dreissig Lady.com is the right fit for you. DreissIg Lady.com.
Cam's Pizzeria isn't just a pizza place, it's a piece of home. Whether you're in Baldwinsville, Camillus, Oswego, or on Lemoyne Plaza, Tony Calcibetta finds a way to give you something that you can't find anywhere else. You got to get something to eat, you're going to get something to eat. You're not in your own home. Well, when you go to Cam's Pizzeria in Baldwinsville, Camillus, Lemoyne Plaza, and Oswego, those locations give you the feeling of just being at home, relaxing, being comfortable. There's nothing like going out and getting good food, and Cam's Pizzeria will give you that. From their traditional slice to pepperoni to my favorite, the cheeseburger pizza, which you have to try, as well as buffalo chicken, chicken bacon ranch, and the other specialties and favorites they have. It's not just about the pizza. It's about the relationships. It's about building a bigger family. And Tony Calachibeta has been all about that since day one, which is why I wanted to work with him, which is why I want to send you there. Because when you sit down in a Cam's Pizzeria, you feel like you're sitting at home. You feel like you can be there with your family, your friends, to study, to have a meeting, or maybe to meet the best person you'll ever find in your life. I know that when I go to Cam's, I truly feel like I'm just walking to another room in my house. I'm just having great pizza in a great atmosphere. A place where I feel comfortable, where I feel appreciated. A place that isn't just a pizza place, but a piece of home. Go to camspizzeria.com right now to get the addresses to the Camillus, Baldwinsville, Lemoyne Plaza, and Oswego locations. Camspizzeria.com. That's C-A-M-S pizzeria.com. Cam's Pizzeria. Truly an experience that you'll always want to come back to.
Welcome back here to Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora on wakeupcalldt.com and mixlr.com /wakeupcalldt. However you're listening, thank you so much for tuning in. We are live from Washington, D.C. in the continuation of my coverage of the ACC tournament as well as championship week and the upcoming NCAA Division I men's basketball tournament. Been live since Tuesday, March 8th and will carry through Sunday, March 13th. Here in Washington, D.C., our nation's capital. And I now am very proud to welcome live onto the show Syracuse Orange men's basketball alum and current Syracuse assistant coach to Jim Boeheim, and also a friend of mine and somebody that I appreciate all the shows that we've been able to do together in the community in Central New York, and always appreciate his opinion and his time spent. So Adrian Autry is here with me. They call him Red. He's here right now. Adrian, how you doing?
How you doing, Dan?
And now, first and foremost, Adrian, I know that this team has been through ups and downs this season, and I talked about them before the break here and looking at the bubble watch, but what can you say about how the team has been in practice and how they've been in the locker room, and when the media is not around and it's just the coaches and the players, how do you feel this team has responded to defeat and responded to adversity this season?
Well, I think, still a little bit of optimism. A little optimism in it, but since we've been back, the practice has been very spirited, really getting after it, and just trying to get better and taking time. And at the end of the day, you still got a chance, you still got a season going, and that's what you talk about. You're gonna be playing some more. You still got some more basketball to play, so you're just trying to get better, prepare for whatever happens.
And when you look at the scenario, I want to go into Pittsburgh this season. Syracuse obviously had him on the ropes at the Peterson, had him on the ropes at the Dome, and then had him on the ropes 72-71 in a loss in the ACC tournament. What can you say about those games against Pittsburgh? Because obviously going 0-3 against Pitt has put Pitt potentially into the NCAA tournament and affected what could happen for Syracuse. So what can you say about the matchups with Pitt and just how you saw those games shake out from standing there on the sideline knowing that these were all within reach of Syracuse?
You got to give Pittsburgh credit. They're very good at attacking the zone. They know what they're doing. They got one of the most experienced teams in the country, and that's, it's a lot to be said for that. They don't, kind of panic. They just keep playing, and they got skilled guys. They got leadership. So, they're a good team, make no mistake about it. You want to compete and win, but it's not like, they're a bad team. So, you just got to continually, try to get better. But those games are all going to be, those games are all going to be tough. They're always going to come down to the end. That's all you can really say, but they're a good team.
I'm sure that the expectation in the scouting report when you look at a team like Pitt was not for Cameron Johnson and Ryan Luther to go off in that game. Just what you can say about them in the ACC tournament and knowing that Michael Young is obviously going to cause you some trouble, James Robinson, Jamel Artis, there's a lot of known names when you look at this Pittsburgh team, but what can you say about Ryan Luther and Cameron Johnson and how they played the third time around against Syracuse in the ACC tournament?
Well, I thought, Cameron Johnson, had a career night. I mean, he was shooting the basketball way off the line, and he got it going. And, we you know, with Luther, we knew, you know, he had been playing really well the last part of the season. The first time we played him, he was injured. He was really the big difference in them really, you know, playing better this year. He started really coming off the bench, him and Jeter, and really giving them, you know, about 15, and those two combined, give them 15 to 20 points, you know, off the bench. So we knew he was, you know, we knew he hadn't been playing well, but Cameron Johnson, you know, he just kind of really, we had did a good job with him the first two games. He really exploded. You know, I think he was a difference.
I want to go into speaking here with Adrian Autry, Syracuse Orange men's basketball alum and current assistant coach here with me. Adrian, when you look at some of the plays that were down to the wire for Syracuse in games that got away, and one of those at North Carolina, down by three, have an opportunity to tie the game or at least get a layup and go forward. What can you say about when you look at some of those plays that made it so close this season? Mike Benajay deciding to go to the basket and attack the basket. Normally when the clock's running down, a team will allow you to take that two because they don't want you to get the three, but missing that layup, what can you say about the shot selection at that point and knowing that that game was so close and you battled back with North Carolina but didn't get the victory? Just what you can say about that game and Mike Benajay's decision.
Well, I think, you know, everybody can second guess of your coach. You know, he went, you know, and when you look at the clock, you know, it was about, I think he went, probably, you know, if he would have made the layup and they would have took the clock would have stopped, it probably would have been about 10 seconds. So, again, you know what? You get a chance to try to get a steal or maybe a trap and then foul, and you put the pressure back on them. And they hadn't been shooting the ball well. So, you know, you can say, yeah, this is that, but I thought, you know, again, I don't think it was a right or wrong decision given on the time, because you still had time to play defense, get a trap, and if not, foul. You know, so, you know, I know people want to say, oh, you should have shot that, should have shot that. I think that was one of those situations where you had time to do both. You know, you needed to score. You know, we needed to score. So, you know, I was okay with that.
And speaking on knowing that you need to score and you need to make the shot and you have time, 6.6 seconds left. Trevor Cooney bringing the ball up the court. His defender falls down on the ground. He's got a look. He takes a long distance three, and it falls off the front of the rim. And obviously, sometime once the ball came off, but nobody there to grab that rebound. And obviously, the ball goes out of bounds as James Robinson chases it down, and time runs out on Syracuse against Pittsburgh in the ACC tournament. Bring me into that play, and you know, I want to talk about Trevor a little bit more after this. But that play itself, was the setup when you're on the sideline and Boeheim and yourself, Mike, Jerry, when everybody's going over kind of what's going to happen from here, was the setup to get Trevor that shot, or were you looking for something else?
No, we were looking for something else. But he was definitely an option. That's why you said, man, he's a senior. He's you know, you want those guys on the court. You know, again, everybody can, you know, this game of basketball is, you know, it's another team out there that is very familiar, and it's a good coach, and, you know, is very familiar, and they're trying to take away things, too. So, you know, you always have to have one or two options, and that was that. You know, we wanted Trevor, you know, you want Trevor and your seniors to have a chance to win the game for you.
Trevor Cooney, throughout his career, speaking here with Adrian Autry of Syracuse Orange men's basketball, when you look at Trevor and I call him the most love-hated man in Syracuse history, at least in the last few seasons. He's taken a lot of heat for the way that he has played, that he's gone up and down. I mean, I've been around Trevor and interviewed Trevor, talked with him over the last 4 years, and I've seen growth in him. I know he's a very mentally tough person just to go out on the court, knowing that he gets the type of verbal attacks that he gets. But what can you say about Trevor and the way that he plays the game and the way that he handles the game, knowing that people have been very hard on him throughout his entire career?
Well, one, I think it's ridiculous. But that's what happens when you give forums and people get a chance to voice their opinions. And a lot of times they're fans, you know, and it's hard for these young kids. People forget these are amateurs, these are young kids, and somebody else's kids. And this is a game that, you know, they're playing at one of the highest levels, you know, right under from, you know, under the love of getting paid, and, you know, and the work that he puts in and the spirit and the effort that he brings, you know, no one ever, you know, that's all you want as a coach, as a worker, as someone that's a boss. You everybody, you know, again, with, you know, with everybody being able to voice their opinions, not anybody can say anything.
What can you say about how Trevor's handled it from here? Because I know that he's somebody that, you know, as much as he kind of hangs his head after a game like this, and it's a tough break for him, and he's been in these situations before. When he's in these types of situations and he's going through that, as well as, you know, when you look back in the Final Four a couple of years ago, how have you seen him handle it? How have you, you know, as a coach, looked at Trevor? How does he go about his process? And what can you say about his strength and his ability to move on to the next game, knowing that you get to see him through this process of going through heartache and then moving forward?
I mean, Trevor's, you know, the one thing I give him credit for, he never comes in, he never hangs his head, he's always bounced right back. And, you know, if you don't know anything, you know, you don't even know that that's happened. He's always, you know, he comes to work every day. He comes to work every day.
You said you were looking for something else when there's 6.6 seconds left in the game against Pittsburgh for the ACC tournament. What was the plan? What was the hope? I know that Trevor obviously took the shot, but what were you looking for on that play?
I mean, I think that, you know, Dan, obviously, Mike Benajay and Trevor Cooney are our leaders. So, you know, you want to try to get the ball to those two guys' hands to get a good shot. You know, again, you draw something up to try to get those, you know, your two best players the ball. And so, you know, that's what happened. You know, Trevor wound up getting the ball. Again, it's one of those things. This is bad. You know, everybody has a chance to analyze and say this and say that. You know, we got a shot. You know, we battled back. You know, it's everything. You know, people forget everything that leads up to that. To that stuff. You know, I thought we did a great job of battling back and get back into it. And you know, you want to give yourself a shot, and we got a shot. You know, we got a shot. And as a coach, you know, you want to be able to get your, you know, your two best players or your veterans a chance to win the game. You know, he's a senior, they've been here. You know, and so, you know, if Mike didn't have the ball, you know, the next thing is, you know, Trevor has the ball. So that's what you want, you know.
This team has been battle tested. You have victories over Notre Dame, you have a victory at Cameron Indoor against Duke, you have a victory against Texas A&M that's been very strong in the SEC, and now the Connecticut's back on the scene on the bubble in a lot of cases, and definitely, in my opinion, you have that win against them from early on in the season when they were ranked in the top 20 in the nation as well. So when you look at being battle-tested, you look at those four wins, and then you look at a bunch of games that got away, what do you think about the team? I mean, obviously you want to see these guys continue on, and they're going to, whether it's the NCAA or the NIT. But when you look at the games, the big games that this team has won, and some of those games where you battled but didn't get the victory when all was said and done, what are you thinking as an assistant coach about this team and kind of what the season looks like now that you've gotten a full look at 32 games?
I mean, again, you know, a good team, talented team, you know, like everything we had our challenges, and, you know, I think those challenges, you know, hurt us, you know, in some games it didn't. You know, a young team relying on, you know, two freshmen and, you know, playing out of position, a lot of times out of position. You know, Malachi's a guard, you know, we got him down there, he battles. And then you got Tyler Lydon, you know, 205 pounds, you know, center, playing center, trying to battle. You know, Daywon Coleman come back from not playing 2 years. You know, not excuses, but, you know, those are the realities. Those things factor in, you know, him getting the rust off and getting the chest back. And, you know, like most people don't understand, you know, when you come back from injury, you're going to have some doubts in your abilities, and, you know, you don't want to get injured again, so it takes some time to get comfortable and get back really into the rhythm of it. So, you know, with all that being said, not excuses again, you know, those things kind of, you know, at times, you know, those things kind of hurt us. But overall, you know, this team is a resilient team, a lot of heart, a lot of character. They battled every game. You know, I don't think it was one game, maybe Louisville, that, you know, that kind of got away from us. You know, we were in every game.
Before I let you go, Adrian, you know, looking at the fact that the team, like you said, has been in games here and has obviously fought back, even if you haven't had victories, do you feel like at this point, when you look around at the other teams that are fighting to get in and kind of not being in control of your own destiny, do you feel like this team has earned the right to play on again? Do you feel like Syracuse has done enough to get in there? I mean, you're going to play games either way, NCAA or NIT, but when you look at this team and you look at the minimal amount of depth, and you look at the fact that Daywon hasn't played for 2 years, that you needed to rely on Tyler Lydon, a true freshman, Malachi Richardson, a true freshman, that Mike was asked to step into a role he didn't have before, that Trevor was asked to be more of a leader than he's had before. When you look at all of those cases and all those scenarios, do you feel like this team, in the work that they've been able to put together, should be in the NCAA tournament?
I mean, I think you know, our case is as good as anyone's. I think just with everything that's going on, I mean, we are right there. And I think when you're right there, people really look at our team, and they evaluated our team and evaluated our situation. Tough year again. Again, not an excuse, but it was a tough year. That's just reality, without coach being out of the, man not there, and then the way it happened, it wasn't a chance to build up. It just abruptly, kind of happened. Which one of those losses, a couple of those losses, that we got, was a result of that. Not say a result of that, but that's when that period has. So it's a little bit of a transition period. So again, with everything being said, I think the team should be in the tournament, but that's not my decision. And I'm a little biased, so I'll be honest. I think we're one of the better teams in there, and I think we're a team, if we get in, we can win some games there. I just feel like we can, we have just as good a chance. College basketball is up in the air this year, I believe.
And lastly for you, Adrian, when you look at the depth, without having Chino out there and Caleb Joseph out there, what can you say to those two things that the team obviously would expect or hope to be 8 or 9 deep, but with the case that's not happening, how has that kind of pushed the other 7 guys to move forward, especially the 3 freshmen?
Well, I think, again, depth, everybody overblows that. The really, really good teams, if you really look at them, probably besides Carolina, most teams play 7 or 8 games. Okay, we play one less guy, we play 7. I don't think that's an issue. That's not an issue. Most good teams and most teams, a couple, handful here and there, play 8 or 9 guys. And it's the production that you need to get from those guys. And I think the biggest thing is, for Frank Howard to get that, work his way into that rotation. It's going to be invaluable to him going forward next year. And Tyler, Lydon, and Malachi being in these battles and seeing, how to win games and know what loses games, and always being prepared, I think, going forward and even now, even going to the tournament, as a freshman, that's stuff that you don't understand because high school is totally different. The speed is different. The value of possessions are different. So I think, those are all great learning lessons. It'd be better if we could have won those games, but we didn't. But those are lessons that they understand now instead of just talking about.
And finally for you, because you have them specifically at your position, Tyler Lydon and Tyler Roberson. When Roberson got a double-double this season, he did it 6 times. When he achieved a double-double, the team is undefeated at 6-0 when he's done so. Tyler Lydon has obviously shown what you told me over a year ago. I said, how would you describe him? And you just made that shooting motion with your hand that he can shoot from anywhere, and he's shown obviously that he can do so and also been able to block and rebound as well. What can you say about Tyler Roberson and Tyler Lydon, knowing that these are your position guys that you're working so closely with? What can you say about what they've put together this season and how you kind of look at their bulk of work for 2015-16?
Again, they've had solid seasons. I think Tyler Roberson, you see the talent there, a little bit more from him. He's an upperclassman. Tyler Lydon, he went through his bumps and bruises and growing pains, but he's really bounced back and really kind of got in the groove and gotten more comfortable, as you can tell, by his production the last, 6, 7, 8 games of the season. He's really been, really good for us. And the group, they both work hard. They're a big part of us, as you can see with the stats and everything that you say, that we need those guys to really play at a certain level for us to compete and have a chance to win.
Well, as always, Adrian Autry, being here on the show, and I appreciate it. I appreciate you taking some time, and I know that you're waiting out and seeing what's going to happen, and obviously, hopefully, either way, you're going to be playing some games, and I know these guys will appreciate the experience, and Mike and Trevor will appreciate another opportunity to end their season in a better way. So thanks, Adrian, for everything you do, and I'll be talking with you soon.
Thanks, Dan. I appreciate it. Take care, man.
All right, take care. That coming from Adrian Autry, Syracuse Orange men's basketball assistant coach and a Syracuse men's basketball alum. And you're not going to get that interview anywhere else. Happening live here on Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora on wakeupcalldt.com and on mixlr.com/wakeupcalldt. This is why you got to listen to the show live. Every single week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 9 a.m. to noon Eastern time, the show is on. This week has been a different week because I decided instead of Monday, Wednesday, Friday to go all week long because I've been live down here in Washington, D.C. covering the ACC tournament and so much more from Tuesday, March 8th, carrying through to Sunday, March 13th. So I thank you, 9 a.m. Eastern time every day. So make sure Sunday, March 13th, you're listening tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. Eastern time for those of you that are listening live right now. And for those listening to the playback, Sunday, March 13th, my final live show from Washington, D.C. for this stint at 9 a.m. Eastern time, and look forward to being back here soon as well. So I thank Adrian Autry for being a part of the show. I thank him for being so open and honest about the situation, talking with me about Tyler Roberson, Tyler Lydon, the team itself, the games they've won, the games they've lost, and how the team sits right now. So I truly appreciate Adrian Autry coming on to the show and talking with me live here this morning. To finish up with my bubble watch, we've gone through a bunch of teams. I said Syracuse is right there on the line. If I had to choose between Syracuse, Connecticut, it's Syracuse. Syracuse and St. Bonnie's, it's Syracuse. I think St. Mary's is going to get in. I think Pitt's obviously going to get in. I put Michigan in, especially if they win their next game in the Big Ten tournament and Monmouth is in. So I don't have Cincinnati in, and pardon me, I picked Syracuse over Cincinnati. Connecticut, Syracuse has the head-to-head with them, but Connecticut is a very hot team right now. It'd be nice to see Syracuse and Connecticut get in because of the danger that they both pose to teams in the NCAA tournament, but it looks like at this point potentially it might just be one of them. For Tulsa in the AAC, which some of you know as the American as well, they're 12-6 in the conference through the regular season, 20-11 overall, 2-2 versus teams ranked in the top 25 at the time of play. They split 1-1 with SMU, both ranked games, won the most recent one, and split 1-1 with Temple, the top team in the ACC, or in the AAC, I should say, and won the most recent game. So, Tulsa, what have you done for me lately? Well, the two games they've won against the top 25 are the two games that have happened most recently. They avenged a loss against SMU. They avenged a loss against Temple. As a 3-seed, though, they lost to 6-seeded Memphis in their first game in this year's AAC tournament, and they lost that game by 22 points. So this is a team that was going in with some momentum, having defeated Temple most recently and SMU most recently. But as a 3-seed, to fall to Memphis, and not just fall to a lower seed, but to lose the game by 22, looks very bad on your schedule here, is obviously one of those black marks on the schedule. They also lost to Memphis in the regular season, so they're 0-2 against the Tigers as a whole. Memphis finished below Tulsa in the AAC at 8-10 in the regular season in the AAC, and 18-14 overall is the current record of Memphis at the time that we're talking. So this is a very damning loss. It's a loss that's going to affect you. Like I said, SMU is not playing in the tournament right now with everything that's gone on with them. So Southern Methodist, it's good to beat them, but they have this factor like the Louisville factor where they're non-existent in the postseason this season for 2015-16. The win against Temple is good, but not surviving through, not lasting through into the AAC Final Four, that's something that is going to potentially affect Tulsa when you look at the way that they stand right now and where they stand right now. Because when you look at this current AAC tournament, when you look at the bracket, the teams that are left, you have number 1 Temple, number 5 UConn, number 10 Tulane, and number 6 Memphis. Memphis, Tulane, or UConn, any of those teams win this, they're playing spoiler alert. Either a 6-seed or a 10-seed is going to make it into the championship game because Memphis is playing Tulane, and Memphis is the 6, and Tulane is the 10. If UConn is able to go forward and they defeat Temple, UConn's in this thing. They're in the NCAA tournament. And whoever comes out of this, if Tulane or Memphis wins over Temple, if anybody beats Temple in this thing, they're going to take that spot that Tulsa would have had. So Tulsa would have been best served by winning the game against Memphis, not losing by 22, going up against Tulane, who was another team that was trying to make a case for themselves during the season this season, if they were able to be in the game and be in the Final Four and make it to the championship game, then I would say that Tulsa squeaks in, but I don't see them making it after the way that they played right now. And knowing if Memphis or Tulane is able to get the upset over Temple, or if UConn gets the upset over Temple even before the championship game, then it's all over for sure for Tulsa. And speaking of UConn, the AAC in the American, they're 11-7 in the conference through 18 regular season games in the American, 8-0 versus teams that finish below them in the AAC. So I talked about teams that don't take care of business, about teams that are under them. And I went into looking at Oregon State and looking at St. Bonnie's. Did they take care of business against the teams that finished below them? And in the case of UConn, they did. 8-0 against the teams that finished with a record that was lower than theirs in the AAC regular season. They're 22-10 overall. They're 1-3 versus teams ranked in the top 25 at the time of play. They defeated Michigan early in the season, which is a team getting hot now, and a team that if they win in their Final Four matchup in the Big Ten, speaking on Michigan, I definitely am going to put Michigan into the NCAA tournament. So they defeated Michigan. If Michigan wins one more game, I think Michigan could still be in right now, but if they win one more game and they go forward from here, then I think that makes UConn look even better. I think if UConn wins and Michigan wins, they're both in, because they're both playing in their championship games in their respective conference tournaments. But if Michigan wins and UConn loses even, you're still looking at the fact of saying, well, they defeated Michigan, and they've done a lot of good things throughout the season. They split 1-1 with SMU, and SMU was ranked both times. 0-2 against Temple is UConn, top in the AAC. They face them in the AAC tournament semifinals, though, in the Final Four of the American Athletic Conference tournament. So if UConn is to get this victory over Temple, after going 0-2 in the regular season against Temple, now you got a victory over Temple, you split 1-1 with SMU, you defeated Michigan, and all the teams that are below you in the American, you're 8-0 against those teams. So if those are the things that we look at, when you look at the bottom feeders of the AAC falling to UConn, we look at a win against Temple, if that is to happen, in the AAC semis in their tournament, and you look at the win over SMU and the splitting with SMU and the win over Michigan, then I think you got to put UConn in. I definitely think you do. They were 0-2 against Cincinnati in the regular season, and they're coming off of a 4-overtime victory where they avenged those two losses to Cincinnati. Freshman guard Jalen Adams kept the Huskies in the conversation of the bubble watch of the NCAA tournament with a 62-foot heave to tie the game at the buzzer to end the third overtime. Went on to win the game 104-97 over the Cincinnati Bearcats, 42 points in 20 minutes of overtime, because there's four overtimes, 5 minutes each. So the four overtimes came together as another half. So there was a third half played. In the first half, 27 points from UConn. In the second half, they upped that to 35. And in four overtimes, which turns into a third half of 20 total minutes, 42 points. UConn is a hot team right now. Michigan is a hot team right now. Both of these teams make it to their conference tournament championship, they're in. If Michigan makes it, UConn doesn't, I still think you got to put UConn in potentially. And if UConn makes it, they defeat Temple. They avenge that loss. They avenge the loss to Cincinnati, which I think helps bump Cincinnati out of the NCAA tournament, and the things that they've done against SMU and Michigan. UConn is a team that literally one more win catapults them in for sure, but I think they might still be there, and Michigan is in that space too. Win one more game, and how can you deny them the right to get into it? And to finish up here with taking a look at the rest of the teams here that are on my bubble watch, had 12 teams on my bubble watch here on Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora on Wake Up Call DT.com and mixlr.com/wakeupcalldt to take a look at the teams that are remaining. I have two more teams to talk about, and one of them being USC has completely fallen off the map. USC is a team that was kind of there, but now all of a sudden they're not there. And when you look at USC and what they've put together this season, they haven't done a lot in the Pac-12. Now, here's the thing. They were on the bubble, but now they're directly in. According to some bracketologists, they're in outright. They don't have to worry about being one of the last four in or anything like that. I want to go to USC's schedule and take a look at USC for a moment here, because this is a team that I think they're projected to not only get in the tournament without any issue, but to get in as a 9 seed. Now, they were 21-12 overall when we're looking at this USC team, the Trojans team. Conference, they were 9-9 in the Pac-12 in the regular season. Non-conference, they were 12-3. When we look at where they are right now, against the top 25, they were 1-7 this season. Against the top 50, they were 5-8. So four more wins when you're talking about teams ranked 26-50. But when you're talking about the top 25, one win and eight tries. Their wins against the top 50, they defeated Wichita State. They defeated Yale. They defeated Arizona by two. They defeated Colorado. They defeated Oregon State. Now, the Oregon State win helps them to potentially jump Oregon State. The Colorado win is nice because Colorado's higher in the Pac-12. The Arizona win is nice as well. So those three wins help you out. Wichita State, give or take that one. Yale, the strongest team in the Ivy League, but they don't play in a conference tournament, so you give or take that one as well. The losses to the RPI top 50, they lost to Xavier, they lost at Oregon, they lost at Oregon State, so now they have a split with Oregon State. That win doesn't look as pretty because it's 1-1 now. They lost to Arizona, so they split 1-1. They lost to Utah, that's a team that's playing in the Pac-12 championship in the conference tournament. They lost at California. They lost to Oregon again, so you got 0-2. And then Utah losing that game the second time around. So when you look at their losses, the top two teams in the Pac-12, Utah and Oregon, USC is 0-2 against both of those teams. Have not defeated Oregon this season, have not defeated Utah this season. Split 1-1 with Arizona, and split with Oregon State. So now Oregon State that I don't have in, USC, this is what I question. They're being put in by some projections, but based on what merit? You didn't defeat the top team in the Pac-12. You didn't defeat the second team in the Pac-12. You didn't defeat Oregon. You didn't defeat Utah. Oregon State's a team that you need to beat. You only did it once out of two times. Arizona, your win looks nice, but your loss is there as well. And then when you bring in Yale and Wichita State, those don't make up for the 1-1 splits and the 0-2s with Utah and Oregon. So I challenge the projection that USC should be put in the tournament right now, because the way that they look, yes, they have 21 wins. That's nice. But they're 500 in the Pac-12 in the regular season, and they did not take care of business against teams that are at the top of the Pac-12. How are you doing against the teams that are residing on top? Not well. And I know I talked about this with Pittsburgh, but in the case of the ACC and where Pittsburgh stands with everything, they didn't beat Miami. They didn't beat Virginia. They didn't beat North Carolina. North Carolina killed them twice. But because they're on the bubble with Syracuse and they've beaten Syracuse three times, that is helpful. Pitt has been able to do that thing that's helped them to separate it, as well as defeat Duke by double digits and win at Notre Dame. And Notre Dame's a team that's going to get in, and Duke's a team that's going to get in. So when you look at the teams that are going to get in for the Pac-12, Oregon's going to get in, and Utah's going to get in. You didn't defeat them. You're 0-4 against them as USC. You don't know if Oregon State's going to get in. You're 1-1 against them. Arizona's probably going to get in. You're 1-1 against them. So you haven't done enough to, in my opinion, guarantee that you're in there. Now, like I said, they're off the bubble, according to some people. I still have them on the bubble, and I think that USC, what's going to happen to them is in a direct look at what's going to happen. They have to look at UConn, and they have to look at Michigan. They have to look at some of these teams moving forward and see, is UConn going to go any farther? Is Michigan going to go any farther? Those are teams that they have to question at this point. Could USC get over Oregon State? Yes. Could USC get in over Cincinnati? Absolutely. Could they get in over St. Bonaventure? Absolutely. But when you look at some of these other teams, I don't put in USC over Pitt. I don't put in USC over UConn or Michigan at this point in time. And finally, with my bubble watch of the 12 teams, Vanderbilt to the SEC, 11-7 in 18 games in the SEC regular season, 19-13 overall. Same record as Syracuse overall. 2-6 against teams ranked in the top 25 at the time of play. Syracuse has a better record there. Split 1-1 with Texas A&M. Syracuse defeated Texas A&M in non-conference play. Vanderbilt lost most recently to Texas A&M. Split 1-1 with Kentucky. Won most recently against Kentucky. Kentucky, the second best team in the SEC behind Texas A&M. A 5 seed that lost to a 12 seed Tennessee. When you look at the SEC tournament, Vandy was a 5 seed. They lost to 12th seeded Tennessee in their first game of this year's SEC tournament, which was in the second round. They're 2-1 against Tennessee after emerging victorious twice in the regular season. So they went 2-0, and then they lost to Tennessee to get bumped out of the SEC tournament. So that's good. You know, when you look at what have you done for me lately, you go, okay, well, Dan, they lost most recently to Tennessee, but they're 2-1. It's not a 1-1 split. They took care of business, so I think that makes them look nice when you look at Vanderbilt. I think splitting with Texas A&M and splitting with Kentucky makes you look nice, but not getting through the tournament and having a 19-13 overall record, this is what makes it dangerous for Vanderbilt. You have the same record overall as Syracuse. When you look at it, you're 19-13 overall. But what Syracuse has on you is they've won more games against the top 25. And when you win more games against the top 25, when it comes down to this, it makes you the more dangerous team, the more lethal team. So if Pittsburgh is above Syracuse, which I believe, you look at Pittsburgh's above Syracuse, Syracuse is above Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt doesn't get in. That's the simplest way for me to talk to you about this. Pitt is in. If Syracuse gets in, then you can't let Vandy in. I know that they split with Texas A&M, but Syracuse has a win against Texas A&M. I know that they split with Kentucky, but Kentucky is not as strong of a team as they've been in the past. Not anywhere close to the team that gets talked about as a national championship contender 3 games in, and 10 games in, and 20 games in, and through the conference tournament. So the worst thing that could have happened to Vanderbilt happened. They lost in the SEC tournament. And when you lose in your tournament game, and that happened to Syracuse, which is why Syracuse is sitting where they're sitting right now, when you look at the SEC and you look at where everything is kind of shaken out at this point, I want to take a look at the SEC bracket. And when we look at this bracket and where it stands right now, Texas A&M, the number one seed against number four LSU. LSU is making a case. The number two Kentucky is taking on number six Georgia. If Georgia defeats Kentucky, if LSU defeats Texas A&M, think about those two things. Kentucky's getting in and Texas A&M is getting in. If LSU somehow, some way wins, then you're not going to see USC in the NCAA tournament and you're not going to see the likes of Vandy in the NCAA tournament if LSU defeats Texas A&M. If Georgia defeats Kentucky, now all of a sudden you got to talk about Georgia in the championship game against LSU or Texas A&M. So there are a lot of things that can happen that are out of the control of Vanderbilt, and Vanderbilt losing affects them from, in my opinion, moving on. Florida was one of those teams on the bubble. They were able to defeat Arkansas. They went on to play Texas A&M. They lost by 6 points. Vanderbilt didn't get that far. They lost by 2, and then Tennessee moved on. Tennessee lost to LSU. So the team that beat you didn't even extend from that point on. So in my opinion, I don't have Vanderbilt in. That is a look at my 12 teams on bubble watch right now to go through very quickly. Cincinnati, currently I have out. Monmouth, I have in. So to look at these 12 teams that are trying to find their way into it, when we break it down, when you look at Cincinnati, you have one on the outside. You have Monmouth on the inside. After that, Michigan, I have them in as well. Oregon State, I have that team out. Going forward from there, Pitt I have in. Syracuse is one of those teams that's still riding the equator line. They still got to wait for some more people. St. Bonaventure, I'm going to go ahead and put in. St. Mary's, I'm going to put in. And as we move forward here with Tulsa, I'm going to put Tulsa out. And UConn, I think it's safe to say they'll probably find their way to sneak in, especially if they win. I don't have USC in, and I don't have Vandy in. So of my teams, I have 6 in, 5 out. And Syracuse still riding that line because Syracuse still needs some help. The farther that UConn gets, the better it is for Syracuse. The farther that Texas A&M gets, the better it is for Syracuse because those wins mean so much more. So Syracuse fans, you have to hope that Texas A&M is in the championship game. And if they win it, obviously it's a huge help. And you got to hope that UConn is in their championship game and that they can potentially win it. That makes Syracuse all the more pretty as the bubble continues to change. It's been a very exciting bubble that's constantly been moving around, but before it pops, before it bursts, let's see where the teams stand. Those are the 12 that I have. 6 in, 5 out. Syracuse riding on the line, hoping for Texas A&M, and UConn is where they kind of stand right now. I want to thank Adrian Autry for being a part of the show today, for joining me here live from Washington, D.C. on Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora. And on wakeupcalldt.com as well as mixlr.com/ Wake Up Call DT. As promised, I said before the show was over that I would take a look at the NFL, get to some football here. We've been talking about basketball all the way through today's show, so now it's time to take a look at what's been happening transactions-wise in the NFL. There has been a lot of movement in the NFL, and it's been very exciting. And when you look at the things that have happened just in the last few days, we go to Wednesday, March 9th. Now, when you look at some of these things, Baltimore, this might look small on a scale right now, but them signing tight end Benjamin Watson to a two-year contract, this is a big thing. Benjamin Watson was a top target for Drew Brees with New Orleans this past season. There were moments where he was truly going after Benjamin Watson. There were moments in a couple games where Ben Watson was his main target. And on a team that lost the majority of their wide receivers and had virtually nobody to pass to, going fourth and fifth on the depth chart, and even trying to dig deep to their third tight end at certain times, having Benjamin Watson, who can be that tight end that's a good receiver for you, is a very strong get for the Baltimore Ravens, as they can look at something like that and appreciate that. And then the Chicago Bears getting linebacker Danny Trevathan, 4-year contract, taking him away from the Denver Broncos, where he just won a national championship, just won Super Bowl 50. This Chicago Bears team, without Brian Urlacher in the last few seasons, they haven't had that presence inside in that middle part of the defense to really give them a push, to give them some fire, to help them get back into a game. Danny Trevathan hoping to be that person, and that's a big get for Chicago on a defense that hasn't done that much lately. The Dallas Cowboys keeping linebacker Rolando McClain on a 1-year contract. I like this. Quarterback Matt Hasselbeck, I have to make a note on this. He announced his retirement, and I want to thank him for everything he's done for the NFL. He was one of those guys that wasn't just there to teach the young guy. He could come in and win a few games. Teams in the AFC South know that. He keeps teams competitive. So just like Vinny Testaverde and other players that have gone before, he will be missed. The release of Andre Johnson by the Indianapolis Colts, no big surprise. Andre Johnson was the leader in multiple seasons in reception yards in the entire NFL of 32 teams, playing on the Houston Texans, and playing at times when he had David Carr, who was getting sacked 90 times a season. No joke, that's not a crazy number. And I think David Carr's first season he was sacked between, I think it was 91 times, if I'm remembering correctly. So when you look at what he was able to do on Houston, and the fact that he couldn't get anything done with the Indianapolis Colts, he didn't have a good relationship on the field. And I'm not saying they fought with each other, I'm saying, as far as, you know, quarterbacks have their people. And no matter what you say, fantasy owners know this for fantasy football. Quarterbacks have their receivers. When somebody goes down and another quarterback comes in, there's somebody else that they're comfortable with. And Andre Johnson maybe started to get a little bit with Matt Hasselbeck, had virtually nothing with Andrew Luck. So that affected him. And the release of Andre Johnson, I'm not surprised with, because he did a lot of good things in Houston, and it didn't translate to Indy at all in the season that he was there. The re-signing of tight end Mercedes Lewis by the Jacksonville Jaguars, I love this. Now, you have Julius Thomas. You're giving him a ton of money. He's supposed to be the dominant guy. But when you have Mercedes out there, you have two strong tight ends. You can put them out there in a tight end set together. You can split them out there. You can have one block and one go. You can have them both go after a fake. I like Mercedes Lewis. I've gotten to interview Mercedes Lewis in my coverage of the Jacksonville Jaguars over the last 7 years. I really appreciate the fact that he's always nice. He is professional. He tells you how he feels about something. He is honest from every experience I've had with him. He appreciates fans. And Jacksonville's been loyal to him, and he's been loyal to Jacksonville. So it's important note to say that, yeah, this is the final contract Mercedes Lewis is going to sign. Let's face that. And it's kind of sad knowing the type of guy Mercedes is, and I'm going to miss him, knowing the way that he's carried himself with the Jacksonville Jaguars. But to know that he's still playing and it's not a 1-year contract, he signed a 3-year contract. So the Jacksonville Jaguars are saying, go out and compete. We still believe you can do it. And because of some of the injuries that Mercedes has gone through, we don't know the extent that he can be, because he's had good seasons where he's gotten hurt and it's been halted. And that can also help you with your longevity. When you get hurt, believe it or not, depending on the injury, if you get hurt, that can help you prolong your career, because if it's not one of those nagging injuries that continues from season to season, now you have more time that you didn't waste 2-3 years ago that you can use now with your body. So I like Mercedes with Julius Thomas. I hope that he's more than just the role of being there and being a part of the team. I think the 3-year contract shows that, so I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do. With getting rid of Benjamin Watson, the New Orleans Saints signed tight end Kobe Fleener to a 5-year contract. So this is a huge contract for Kobe Fleener, somebody who was always left by the wayside with Dwayne Allen on the Indianapolis Colts at tight end. Kobe Fleener was a teammate in college of Andrew Luck, and now they have been separated. Kobe Fleener going to the New Orleans Saints on a 5-year contract. I'm very interested in seeing that because that's a substantial contract. I can see giving Kobe Fleener 2 to 3 years. I could see him giving a 1-year, test it out and see how it goes. But 5 years, that means that there's a big belief in the New Orleans Saints and what they've seen from Kobe Fleener, and hopefully they'll utilize him more than other teams have in the past here. And re-signing Doug Martin to a 5-year contract, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, to do that, when you look at Doug Martin and you look at his output, this is somebody that, I mean, fantasy owners know this. I never want to take him when it comes to fantasy football. I never want to do that. And this year I was like, you know what? There's not a lot of people left out there. I waited to take my third or fourth running back, and I was like, I got to go get somebody. I think it was my third running back. I went and got Doug Martin, and just like I've seen him let other people down, and I constantly tell people, if it's up to me, don't draft him. I drafted him. I'm not happy I did. He's got 5 years, $35 million to stay in the NFL with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I don't like the decision. I think there's better out there, and it's not that I don't think that he can do some good things. I don't think he's consistent. And when you're paying him $35 million, that's money that could be spent in other places. With the Pittsburgh Steelers, signing tight end Ladarius Green, they've had the same tight end since, I think, God created the earth. When God took a day off on day 7, I think that that's when Heath Miller was born. And Heath Miller finally retiring here and giving way to needing another tight end. Ladarius Green has been in the shadow of Antonio Gates in San Diego, and he had some injuries, but he's done some good things. He's got a 4-year contract to make a name for himself and stand out on his own and be the front runner with the Pittsburgh Steelers at the tight end position. So I'm excited to see what he can do there. Tom Brady signed a 2-year contract extension. So to all the Patriots fans, they're excited. To all the fans that dislike the Patriots, they're very upset. But that means you respect him. If you hate Tom Brady for his success, that's because he's a very successful quarterback. And if you love Tom Brady for what he's done, that's because he's a very successful quarterback. So no matter what way you slice it or how you look at it, Tom Brady, whether the team's cheating or not, and in the moments Deflategate and Spygate and all that, he still has to go out there. He still has to have precision. He has to have good vision out there. He has to be able to run when he has to, which he's shown that he can do. He's got to have a good arm, good decision-making, be on point with his teammates, and know what he needs to do. And I think when it comes to Tom Brady, love him, hate him, or ride somewhere in the middle, he's a quarterback, especially with Peyton Manning being gone, that is at the top of the NFL. Running back C.J. Anderson, who had a good season in the past with the Denver Broncos, but fell off the face of the earth for the most part with the Denver Broncos this season. He had a few good games, but he gives you about one good game every 5 times, so it makes sense that he signed to the Miami Dolphins, who seem to like running backs in recent history that only give you one good game every once in a while. He has a 4-year contract with the Miami Dolphins, and hopefully C.J. Anderson, for his sake, can resurrect himself in Miami, and I hope that he does better. The signing of quarterback Brock Osweiler by the Houston Texans mean the Denver Broncos desperately need somebody. The young gun, who is maybe a forgotten child behind Peyton Manning, and when he came into the NFL in general, all of a sudden could become the number one person in Denver. He's won games with Denver en route to Super Bowl 50 in their championship. When Peyton Manning was out, he kept the team on pace. When Peyton Manning was out, he made it look like Peyton Manning hadn't gone anywhere. And now Brock Osweiler, this was one of the biggest gets by Houston and one of the biggest losses by any one of the 32 teams by Denver not being able to sign Brock Osweiler to a new contract. Very tough for them. And Houston, they have kind of had this carousel of quarterbacks like the Cleveland Browns. these two expansion teams when Cleveland came back in 1999, when the Houston Texans came in the early 21st century, they have still been looking for their signature quarterback, and they have not found theirs yet. Brock Osweiler, my hat's off to you, my best to you. Many a player have come through. When you look at Brian Hoyer and Ryan Mallett, David Carr, Matt Schaub, the Houston Texans have tested it out numerous times to no avail. Hopefully Brock Osweiler will change history for his sake and for Houston Texans' sake moving forward. When we look at some of the other moves that were made here in the NFL recently, some of the other people that were signed here to teams, Mark Sanchez signed as a veteran quarterback for the Denver Broncos. I think that this almost certifies that they're going to be going after somebody in the NFL draft that's coming up here very, very soon. Mark Sanchez, not a bad quarterback. He can win you some games. He didn't get enough respect on the Jets. He didn't get enough respect on the Eagles. He still doesn't have respect going to Denver. I'm sure there's Denver fans that have upheaval. I'm sure there's Denver fans that wanted to throw up. I'm sure there's Denver fans that are screaming at the organization for what they did in taking Mark Sanchez. But I caution you, how many teams have a backup quarterback that can come in and do work? And he's a young kid still. So Mark Sanchez, he's somebody that I think the Dallas Cowboys should have picked up, in all honesty, but they did not. They had more than one opportunity to, and they let it go by the wayside. The Denver Broncos quarterback Mark Sanchez, he's there. He's there for two or three games, I believe. He's there to maybe start the season to help the rookie. But don't be surprised by any stretch of the imagination by Denver going after a quarterback in the NFL draft. And finally, to make a note, Cleveland Browns, speaking of quarterbacks, they've waived their quarterback, Johnny Manziel. Instead of waiting for the team to just fall into the basement, deeper into the basement, because they haven't gotten out of the basement, the best quarterback they've had since their return in 1999 was Kelly Holcomb. They got them right to the cusp of the NFL postseason, getting to the playoffs, and didn't win that game. But Kelly Holcomb, some people don't even know who he is, or that he even played in the NFL, which is a travesty and a sin if you're a Cleveland Browns fan. He was the best one out there. Johnny Manziel, I said it before the draft, months before. I would not take this person. He is not a leader. I would not want to play for him. I don't like the way that he acts off the field. And all this talk about abuse of drugs and alcohol and partying and how is he treating his girlfriend or ex-girlfriend or this, that, and the other thing. When there's someone that has all these off-the-field issues, it is a red flag. So many teams saw it in the NFL, including the Cleveland Browns. They did not take Johnny Manziel the first time that they had an opportunity a few seasons ago to take Johnny Manziel. They didn't do it in the NFL draft in the beginning. They had a top 10 pick. They let Johnny go. They went and got Johnny later on in the 20s of the NFL draft. When they had a second pick in the first round, that's when Cleveland got him. Over 20 teams passed on Johnny Manziel, including the Dallas Cowboys, who like players that have problems. Like Jerry Jones seems to like players that constantly cause you an issue. And when you talk about a domestic disturbance or any issue like that, well, the Dallas Cowboys have no problems taking on guys that are involved in potential domestic disturbances. And Johnny Manziel was one of those guys that was in that realm. When Jerry Jones says, I don't want Johnny Manziel, I don't even think this guy should be playing in the Arena League when somebody like Jerry Jones makes a statement like that. Now, I don't hate Johnny Manziel. I'm not one of those crazy people that's coming out and sending him death letters and hoping that he dies. I'm an impartial sportscaster that talks to players in college, in high school, that are hoping to make the NFL. And then I talk to players that are in the NFL. I talk to some of the guys that make it. I talk to some of the guys that don't. I talk to some of the guys that make it for a short amount of time and don't have longevity. I talk to some of the guys that have longevity, like a Mercedes Lewis. But when I look at, so as an impartial sportscaster, I know how hard it is to get in the NFL. I know how difficult it is to look around the country and to know that teams are sending players from NCAA Division I, A, Division I AA, Division II, Division III. Jerry Rice was a Division III wide receiver. D3. And Abilene Christian, you look at a school like that, they're sending people to the NFL. It doesn't matter what school you come from. It matters if you fit a system and if you're talented. And NFL scouts of the 32 teams pride themselves, and ask the New England Patriots about this, they pride themselves on doing the research to go find a gem and dig deep on a player that you're not even thinking about, on a backup at a good school, on a starter at a school that nobody's thinking about, at a D2 school or a D3 school that maybe didn't win the championship or did win the championship. When you look at the players that are on the board when it comes to the NFL draft, there are teams that pride themselves on finding those players that come from schools all over the country. It doesn't have to be the top named school, the top ranked school, the national champion school, the Heisman Trophy winner. It doesn't have to be that. Look at this season. Look at the NFL draft. Going in, senior quarterback coming out of North Dakota State, Carson Wentz, is the number one projected quarterback to go. Jared Goff from California, that's not the biggest team in the world. It's a respected team, but it's not a top team. It's not a team that played in the college football playoff. It's not a team that won a national championship. But Jared Goff, he's up there too. Memphis's Paxton Lynch is there, somebody who I've had the opportunity to be around and cover in my coverage of the American Athletic Conference. So when you look at that, Western Kentucky, Brandon Doherty. When you look at these quarterbacks, Dak Prescott from Mississippi State. You have Cardale Jones from Ohio State. You have Connor Cook from Michigan State. You have Kevin Hogan from Stanford. You have Nate Sudfeld from Indiana. You have Jacoby Brissett from North Carolina State. You have Jacob Coker from Alabama. You have Vernon Adams Jr. from Oregon. You have those quarterbacks of schools that people know and people pay attention to. But North Dakota State, Carson Wentz, this is where it goes to show. It doesn't matter where you come from. It doesn't matter what school you go to or how many wins you have. It doesn't matter what division you play in. It matters how you play the game and if you fit into a system in the NFL. That's what it matters. And Johnny Manziel, to me, he didn't fit in anywhere because he's not a leader. He's not somebody, I don't care about how talented he is. Now, when you're throwing off your back foot, he was throwing football passes like he was taking fadeaway jumpers on a basketball court. To throw off your back foot, falling backwards, heaving it up in the air, hoping to God that somebody catches it, and leaving it up to your wide receivers to get banged and bruised out there because you know when the ball's up there like a punt, they're going to get hit a lot on those plays. He didn't think about a lot of people outside of himself. Now, I don't know Johnny Manziel personally. I haven't taken a walk with Johnny Manziel. I would love to. I always appreciate that because if I'm going to talk about somebody, I want the ins and outs of everything. But what I can say from the outside looking in is that Johnny Manziel has had issues off the field that haven't been corrected. He had these issues. He took them through Texas A&M. He took them to the NFL draft. He took them to the Cleveland Browns. He took them to year one. He took them into year two. And they didn't go away in year two. So for the Cleveland Browns to say, you know what, we made a mistake, I think they knew that when they drafted him. That's why they passed on him the first time around. I think they knew people want us to take Johnny Manziel. He's a lightning rod. He's like Tim Tebow, but not in the personality or in the morality, just in the fact that he's polarizing. People are going to pay attention to him in the media. They're going to talk about us. We're going to be back on the map again as the Cleveland Browns. People are actually going to care about us. They're going to put us on SportsCenter because we have Johnny Manziel. Well, what did that do for your locker room? Nothing. What did it do for your win-loss record? Nothing. What did it do for an opportunity for a comeback? Nothing. What did it do with expanding the team and making people want to play in Cleveland? Not much. As far as I'm concerned, Johnny Manziel had an opportunity that so many people would love the opportunity to have, and he didn't utilize the opportunity to the best of his ability. He didn't care about it the way that you need to, and that's what makes me upset. I'm not here to burn him at the stake. I'm here to say, Johnny Manziel, I have talked to many, many players that would love the opportunity that you have to be in the NFL, period, on the practice squad, on the 53-man roster, as a backup quarterback, as a starting quarterback, and you had all of that. And when you got suspended, you went out and partied. When you had, every time Johnny Manziel has had an opportunity to prove himself better, he hasn't. Fool me once, shame on me. Pardon me. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Fool me 3, 4, 5, 10 times. Who's that? If fool me twice is shame on me, then what's fool me 3 times? What's fool me 4 times? Cleveland didn't want to figure out what fool me 11 times or 12 times was. They said goodbye. And I understand it.
I respect the decision. Johnny Manziel, you have some talent. I don't think that you have the talent to be a starting quarterback to go out and win a Super Bowl. I don't think that you have the talent right now to go out there and lead a team and command a team. And even if you had the talent, I don't think that the team would listen to you based on the way that your personality is and the way that you act out there. So if you want to stay in the NFL, change. Change for the better. You don't have to change the person that you are in the sense of if you're a moral person, you're out there, you're loving, you're doing well, you're respecting your teammates, you're appreciating the opportunities that God has blessed you with. But you are going out there and you're not treating this opportunity like it's a precious gift. And you're not showing that to your teammates, you're not showing that to an organization. 20 plus teams passed on you in the NFL draft. The team that took you has now passed on you in your first two seasons. There are very few teams left. There's about 10 teams left that didn't already pass on you once. And if they're going to pass on you or not pass on you, it's up to you at this point, Johnny. It's not about talent. It's about how you're going to act. How are you going to move forward? How are you going to live in this situation? And that's where they stand right now. And that's how I look at it when I look at Johnny Manziel, and that's how we'll wrap up today's show. Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora on wakeupcalldt.com and mixlr.com/wakeupcalldt. I'll talk to you very soon. And, of course, follow me on facebook.com/wakeupcalldt and @calldt on Twitter for the ACC tournament finale. I had both of these teams in the championship game, North Carolina the one seed and Virginia the two. They're both going to be one seeds in the NCAA tournament. Thank you once again to Adrian Autry, and thank you for listening in. I'll talk to you soon, and God bless.